the soft seats. Hello and welcome to the Oceana Community Services District Board of Directors meeting for September 24th, 2008. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
President
Hill. Here.
Vice President Brookout.
Here.
Director Dahl.
Here.
Director
Dean. Here.
Director
Mann. Here.
Please join us in the flag salute.
Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number three is public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all comments. However, in accordance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on items that are not on the agenda this evening. For each individual agenda item, there'll be comment time with that agenda item. So if anybody would like to address the board on a general topic, please come up. Jim?
Yes, good evening. My name is Jim Hoover. I live at Duna Vista Mobile Home Park here in Oceano. I first of all want to thank all of the board members here this evening for the fine work that you do for this community. I would also especially like to thank Mr. Jim Hill, who has helped us tremendously in the last 3 or 4 days on issues that we have in our particular park. If I may take just a few of your minutes, I'll briefly give you two of the examples that we're going through at this particular time in our park. The first issue is on the Arroyo Creek assessment that I'm sure all of you are aware of. We have been paying on this assessment for a couple of years now, which we have no problem with, I might add. But we have been paying 75% of this assessment, and the owner has been paying 25%. The reason for this is fairly plain. You want to look in the California Civil Code Section 798.49. It mandates that we are only responsible, being that we rent the space, for the space that our unit sits on. In conjunction, this is an assessment on the overall park, which the owner is responsible for. After getting this copy, we immediately went down to the tax board. They were very generous, very cooperative with us, and we pulled the tax bills for the fiscal year of 2007-2008. Along with the help of a department head, we found out two things. Number one, there wasn't an increase in the assessment. And number two, the county billed the landlord October of last year, which is the fiscal year 2007-2008. So consequently, we feel that this is not only a bogus situation, but it's just outright fraud. Another thing I'd like to bring up to you is the ongoing rent and lease controversy that our park is putting up with. First of all, management has told a lot of people that have come into the park since approximately 2005 that, first of all, our park did not have rent control. I'm sure all of you know that this area is zoned for rent control. We even checked with Mr. Larry Booth, who is the head organizer of rent control for the county. He also assured us that, yes, you have rent control. So basically what's happening here is that the owner of the park is basically bypassing all laws and codes, and everyone that comes in the park at this particular time, basically since 2005, is given one choice and one choice only, and that is to sign a lease either over a period of 5 years or 10 years at 5% per year, which multiplies every month. Rent control at this present time is at one of the highest points it's ever been, but it's still approximately 2% cheaper than this 5% that the manager is demanding everyone to pay. I especially, again, want to thank Jim Hill for pointing us in the right direction here. And currently, this has been presented to the district attorney's office for the county. But I would very much appreciate on my behalf and our 80-some-odd members that we have in our club to urge you to do whatever that you could possibly do for us, and we would deeply appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment at this time?
Well, just one quick little follow-up on that.
Okay.
Assessment that's assessed on the creek there for the flooding that's going on, there's the advisory council. It's for the zone 11A, and the advisory council right now has a vacancy on it if anybody is interested in becoming active in advising the board of supervisors on the activities going on in the zone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
I'd also like to point out, I have some pictures of your area, historical aerial photographs showing changes made down there over the years, if you're interested.
Members of the board who chose to support us in our actions trying to achieve some security for our homes in the mobile home park conversion ordinance. I just wanted to say thank you, and that the mobile home members of the mobile home park communities have duly noted your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment at this time? Question, Barbara?
Does that come up before the Board of Supervisors November 4th?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Good evening. I just want to, well, first of all, my name is Sylvia Martinez, and I'm a resident of Oceano and here at Duna Vista Mobile Home Park. And I want to give thanks to Jim Hill. He was very instrumental in helping us with the issue we had on the Royal Grande Creek. And one door was closed, and so Jim helped us, and another door was open to get the ball rolling on this issue. So I just want to thank you and everybody else who gave us help. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other public comment? Mark.
Good evening, President Hill, members of the board. My name is Mark Wampler, Royal Grande resident. The reason I came here tonight is because I still have family here in Oceano, and their concerns are my concerns of public safety, costs of water, sewer services, and garbage services. And I'm also especially empathize for previous comments about the plight of mobile home owners. I, too, have had some personal experience. And actually, mobile home parks fall under the jurisdiction of the state mobile home residency law. And that would be a good place to go. However, my experience with the mobile home residency code is that there just doesn't seem to be a lot of teeth behind the ordinances. I've experienced blatant violations of the ordinances by mobile home parks. And I want to elaborate on some horror stories. It is a plight, and that I do empathize with that. I'd say go to the state, appeal to the state, get some teeth into the mobile home residency law. You know, homeowners shouldn't be charged when a lawn is mowed to be charged to the individual owners and so forth. All I can say is that I know that there are blatant violations that are ongoing, and that if the state can somehow put some teeth into the mobile home residency law, that would be the way to go. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, hearing none at this time, we'll move on to board member items for discussion. Pamela?
I just want to remind everybody, tomorrow is our fall cleanup, and you can put extra trash out tomorrow, up to 12 trash bags. So use it while you can.
Bill?
Not at this time.
Vern?
Nothing.
Barbara?
Nothing.
I have nothing either. Brings us to item number 5, review and approval of the minutes from September 9th. The Utility Operations Supervisor Report. We have Phil Davis, our Utility Operations Supervisor. Phil?
Okay. We received one call for a possible sewer system failure, but it turned out it was in somebody's backyard. They were cleaning a pond. And there were no leaks in the water system during the month. The crew did replace an old 3-inch water service for the Fairgrove School, and we spent considerable time cleaning and painting the exposed pipe manifolds down at well 7 and 8. August was a big month for collecting water samples. In addition to the regular weekly and monthly water samples, we had to collect 20 additional samples for lead and copper analyses. And we had a tree, it was some large branches off a tree, fell over one morning and blocked the back gate to the sheriff's office. We cut up the branches and hauled them away. Other jobs during the month were routine meter service orders, vehicle repair, cleaned some graffiti, and we picked up some trash that had been dumped over on South 4th Street. A lot of trash, really. During the month, we loaded a truck with approximately 12 ton of broken pavement and concrete, had it hauled out to the Gator, and we purchased and had delivered 4.5 ton of hot asphalt to repair the streets where we've been making some water line changes. And we test ran the Waukesha booster and the Rolls-Royce generator. In addition, we prepared 2 fee letters, updated 2 will serve letters, and completed the monthly report for the State Department of Health Services and San Luis County. We produced 90.94 acre feet of water during August. This was 20 acre feet of state project water, 40.07 acre feet of Lopez project water, and we pumped 26.8 acre feet of groundwater. The total amount of water produced in August 2008 was 5% less than was produced in July 2008, but it was 0.7% more than was produced 1 year ago in August. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you very much, Phil.
President Hill, I have people in the audience indicating that they couldn't hear Phil's report, so I think we need to speak up louder, and I'm one of those that doesn't speak loudly, so I'm going to work on it too.
Okay, thank you. We will try to speak a little bit more loud.
Phil, on the graffiti that you cleaned up on 4th Street, was it sprayed on a building or?
The only one I remember is some of the ornamental trash cans. On South 4th Street, that was just junk that had been dumped in the trees there.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for that.
And in front of a business down there. That's the reason why it was called to our attention.
The community appreciates it.
Okay, is there any public comment on the report? That particular cleanup under discussion was done by our utility service crew. Mm-hmm. Okay, hearing no comment, we'll receive and file the report. Thank you, Phil. Mm-hmm. We have no fire items tonight. Utility items, 8A, cleaning and inspection of...
An inspection of the district sewer and water lines. This is the emergency cleaning and inspection.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to continue the declaration of emergency for cleaning and inspection of sewer and water lines. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice
President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Item number 8B is consideration of sale of water to Grand Mobile Manor and Halcyon Estates. This is a recommendation of the general manager to approve agreements to provide water services to Grand Mobile Manor and Halcyon Estates. Staff reports and agreements are included in our package or have been delivered. Patrick?
Mr. President, members of the board, several months ago, the owners of Grand Mobile Manor and Halcyon Estates approached the district with a request for the district to provide them with water service. Ken here. On the board at the board meeting of August the 13th, 2008, the board directed the general manager to prepare four agreements, a water service agreement between the district and each of the mobile home park owners, and water wheeling agreement between the district and the city of Aurora Grande for each of those mobile home parks. The direction included certain specifics. So the agreements include the following: that the parks will be required to annex into the district's sphere of influence immediately and eventually annex into the district itself, that the parks will be allowed to continue to receive water through the water distribution system of the city of Aurora Grande. The district will sell water directly to the parks and wheel the water through the distribution system of the city, and the city of Aurora Grande will charge a wheeling fee for that service. As far as State Water Project, Lopez Connection Fee and Capacity Charges, those fees will be reduced to reflect the fact that experience has shown that these parks use less water than a typical equivalent dwelling unit. The typical single-family residence, or EDU, uses one-third of an acre-foot of water per year. However, both parks combined only use 7.2 acre-feet of water annually, or slightly over one-tenth of an acre-foot per unit. To reflect the reduced water usage, connection and capacity fees are to be reduced to one-third of the existing fees, commensurate with the actual amount of water used by these units. The four proposed agreements were provided in the packet, and it's recommended that we look at each one individually. There are some corrections to each one, and then if it's the board's pleasure, we can approve them. So they can be presented to the mobile home park owners and to the city of Aurora Grande for approval.
Okay.
So you want to go through each one?
Proposing to proceed through each one?
If that's suitable.
Are we on discussion?
I think you want to continue the staff report.
Yeah, just real briefly, I'd like to point out some things that need to be done.
Okay.
On attachment two, which is a service agreement to provide water outside of service district to Halcyon Estates, the second word, it says fee. It should be fees with an S because there's more than one fee. That's all the corrections.
In that same paragraph, look at the bottom line, based on the each mobile.
Right. The should be deleted.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's all the corrections I have to that attachment. The second attachment three on the second page, paragraph 1B, the correction that was just pointed out by Director Mann applies here as well. You should delete the in the last paragraph of that, or last sentence of that paragraph. That's the only correction I have in that attachment. And then attachments 4 and 5, there are really no attachments, although there are a number of dates that have to be filled in as appropriate.
Okay.
That's all.
Comment or questions? First of all, on the staff report?
I have comment or questions. On two annexation, you're talking about the district, the mobile home parks have to become part of our sphere of influence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has to be done before we move forward with any of this other stuff, and it will have to go to LAFCO, and Aurora Grande will have to, I believe they're in Aurora Grande's sphere now. Aurora Grande will have to say they don't want them in their sphere, and we have to say we do. And I believe that will have to go to the LAFCO before, and I feel that should be taken care of before we move forward with these contracts.
Well, the agreements say that getting that accomplished is a contingency of the district's responsibility to provide the water. So it does, this agreement does contemplate the timeline that you're referring to. But I don't think anybody wanted to go forward and spend the money to accomplish the things that needed to be accomplished unless they knew they were going to get the water at the end. This is the same format that was used in connection with the Canyon Crest water sale and the Christie water sales that were done.
I just want to be sure that no water is flowing until this is taken care of.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That is the timeline that these agreements contemplate.
Because sometimes LAFCO doesn't move very quickly.
We understand.
I have a question, and it's concerning the concern is about these becoming condominium units and being converted, and we wanted to ensure that if that happened, the fees, the developer fees, would kick in at that point. How was that covered in these agreements? I didn't see how
the agreements don't specifically address.
The water level may remain flat, yet the developer gets effectively a free pass on our customary fees, which
that's a good point. I wasn't aware that conversion to condominiums was an issue.
That's actually before the Board of Supervisors on November 4th, and the current prohibition against conversion of properties of this type may or may not be renewed at that time, so there's a potential that could happen.
I would think that it would be a conversion to anything, or conversion from the mobile home.
From a mobile home use
to
something
anything.
Else.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Should be based on either conversion or water use. You should have both.
But then it should kick into our regular developer fees, not.
Yeah, with both stipulations.
This,
yeah, I agree.
Reduced rate.
Alex, we can add language in here without having to bring this back to the board.
Well, that's the board's choice.
I don't think so. I think we'll bring it back.
Okay.
I don't want to do it without bringing it back.
Okay.
And it's only 2 weeks. We have enough time to do that.
We do have enough time.
Yeah. And any conversion of property requires another will serve letter, so they would have to come back to us.
Perhaps it might be wise, I don't know how the rest of you feel, but to wait till after November 4th to see what happens, too.
When does their existing water agreement?
I believe it's December the 31st.
Is it 12/31?
Is that, Chuck, when does your agreement with the city of Aurora Grandy terminate?
December. And that's actually an extension of a temporary contract that was for 5 years. And regarding the conversion to...
Could you come to the microphone so that you get your voice gets caught on the tape?
And name.
I'm sorry, maybe I can just clarify something. The temporary contract with the Aurora Grandy was for 5 years, and because for whatever reasons that was passed over, and Aurora Grandy agreed to give us one other year, 12-month extended contract, which will be over in December.
When in December?
I believe it's the 17th, but I can't be positive. I can find that information for you tomorrow.
I think Chuck knows.
It's the end of December.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's the 30th or the 31st.
And then the other thing is that he was talking about possible conversions or subdivision of the property and other uses. I believe that is just being discussed with the Board of Supervisors, and they're very concerned about being able to keep affordable housing in our county, and something is under consideration for if that were to occur, that it would be one, the Coastal Commission is doing something about one for one. In other words, any replacement of affordable housing would have to be replaced with affordable housing. And also with regard to our park being not a senior park, our park was always a senior park and always had less than a 20-80 ratio until just within the last few years. We may not have it, but I was thinking about that the other day. So I do think we still fall into the criteria that most of our residents in the park are seniors living on fixed incomes. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Hugh Gilson, could I make a couple of clarifications? On November 4th, the Board of Supervisors will be considering two separate ordinances, one having to do with mobile home park conversion, whether to other uses or to resident ownership or condominium subdivision. And then there will be another ordinance, which is the bona fides ordinance, which is an ordinance to establish a certain... Criteria. Thank you. Before the state law that governs at this present time conversions to subdivision will go into effect, which allows certain rent increases and more or less negates for certain income levels any rent control. So, but as far as when you were talking, Ms. Dean was talking about. A condo conversion. That in a mobile home park structure normally means a conversion to resident ownership, whether through a corporate setup or individual lot ownership or something of that nature, rather than a conversion to another use where you build condos at some later date or private homes. I just thought you might appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh. I guess my concern would be characterized of the current owners being moved off the property and the property converted to some other use, whether that might be a residential development, a commercial development, or other purpose.
That's our concerns, too. I think that's why I saw people in charge of supervisors.
I think my concern for the district is to make sure that the idea that I think was expressed by the board members at our last meeting that we took up this matter, that if there was such a conversion, that the developer fees and the state water project fees, I saw the mention of developer fees in here, but I didn't really see the address of the connection fees being increased under those conditions. So that was one other item I had a question on in these agreements or draft agreements.
I think I still would like us to put this on hold until November 4th so we know what's happening.
It's not likely it could get approved by the end of December if we wait till November the 4th.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
It's not likely that this could be approved by the end of December if we wait until November the 4th. I just need to, everybody should be aware of that.
Have you made arrangements to get this on the LAFCO agenda so that it can be approved?
Not until it's approved here, but if it looks like we're going to approve it, then I'll talk to LAFCO.
The wheeling agreement also has to be approved by the city of Rio Grande, so we're somewhat at their mercy for their time schedule as well.
Mm-hmm. We did discuss it with LAFCO, with both the director and the assistant, and they felt it was doable, but we need to move on it. Mm-hmm. And the city of Rio Grande will support it. I have the assurance.
Vern, comments or thoughts?
No.
Okay. Public comment on this item then. Mark?
Yes, Mark Wampler, Rio Grande resident. I have a couple of concerns, just some thoughts. If OCSD were to extend its sphere of influence to accommodate these two parks, would by default, would not also the district be required to supply also sewer, garbage, street lighting, et cetera? Would that be also a LAFCO something that came to my mind that would be a concern that by default the rest of OCSD services would be required, not only just water? And secondly, if, as far as I know, I might be wrong, but this is the first time that I've heard where Oceano has extended its sphere of influence. If that's be the case, would that not be considered a precedent-setting action that, you know, if in the future, say, Roy Grandy or Grover says, well, we really don't want to service these people, we want you to take it over. I'm concerned about that. We've got a good deal here as far as water goes. I understand that AG and Grover might be a little bit strapped for water. I understand that. But nonetheless, the district here has valuable resources that should be considered, protected, and for the Oceano citizens first. So I think it might be a precedent-setting action should be concerned about and be looked at. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other public comment? Hugh?
Hugh Gilson again. I just wanted to say that Ms. Dean is correct in, as someone who's been intimately involved with this process for the last 4 years, these hearings at the Board of Supervisors are going to have some far-reaching effects on the mobile home owners. But on this particular issue, I don't think there is any need to delay the implementation, whichever way you decide, and possibly deprive these parks of water. Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh. Mary?
Hi, Mary Lucia Shannon. Mine's not so about much about the service, but when the language is written for the development, what we've noticed is a lot of the single wides are being swapped out for doubles and larger units, and a lot of times that process, Mr. Attorney.
Mary, I have to ask you to address the board with the comments.
I forgot about that one.
Thank you.
So am I clear on what I'm requesting?
Yes, I believe so.
Thank you.
Jim, I have one more question. If I could ask whoever's a rent control expert out there, perhaps this gentleman. When a space is under rent control and the person that has that space leaves for whatever reason, the next person that comes into that space, do they still get the rent control, or are they now a new deal?
Hugh Gilson, the space will continue under rent control.
Okay.
By the law. However, my experience is that it is largely honored in breach unless the homeowners in the park have an organization or other means of standing up for their rights.
So it would be like if I went to, you know, Joe Blow left and I went and I wanted that space and I'm a senior and I would be eligible for rent control. If I didn't know that, or push them, perhaps I wouldn't get the rent control?
If you bought the home on that space, if the rent control does not go on the space, the rent control goes on the home. One of the major reasons why mobile home park owners like to eliminate a single wide or an older mobile and put in another one is that rent control ends when you replace the home.
All right, that was what I
at least in our Title 25, the local county rent control law.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Jim?
Yeah.
Come on.
I'd also add to what you said. This is not only a mobile home residence law, but it's also under the federal housing. Okay. And I'm not going to bore you by reading all of it, but it's fairly clear that the state that it is the responsibility of management, okay, to give anyone coming into the park all the avenues and all the options, which is not only rent control, but like in the case where Hugh and I live, you also have the option to take over an existing lease if you want to, instead of rent control. A lot of these leases where we live are pretty good deals. They're $5 a year, okay? So you also have that option. But like I say, it states very clearly in both the California Mobile Home Residence Law and the federal law that it is solely the responsibility of management to give whoever comes into the park all the avenues under those laws.
Thank you.
Transfer of leases is part of the civil code, California civil code, I'll say.
Yes, please come in.
My name is Carol Henson, and I'm from Halcyon Mobile Home Estates. A lot of these people that are here today are in Oceano, but I don't think what they're understanding is that the rent control is San Luis Obispo County. And their concerns and these things that the guidelines, you know, some people can move out a small home and put in a new home and not be charged more money. Some people can sell their little home and somebody else can come in and they can put in a new home and not be charged more money. If the landlord buys that mobile home, which is occurring a lot with elderly, fragile residents, then the landlord can have control of that lot, and he can have the old mobile home moved out. He can grade and level that lot, have a new lot mobile home put in, which is called new construction. And once he gets new construction, he can raise the base rent of that mobile home that anything he thinks the market will bear. Although that mobile home is still in rent stabilization, according to the rent stabilization ordinances, in that he cannot raise the rent any more than 60% of the CPI one time each year. So if the rent was $350 and he bought the old mobile home and moved one out and moved another one in, and he can make it at $550 or $600, whatever the market will bear, and then from that time on. And as far as the leases are going, as with mobile home residency law, a person is supposed to be able to have a one-month lease or be able to have a lease for 12 months. But any lease that takes a mobile home that is over 12 months will take a mobile home out of rent stabilization ordinances. So over a period of time, if a landlord can offer leases to people that I don't know how a lease could be actually attractive if a landlord offers you a $450 year lease with only a $5 rent increase over the next 5 years, when the actual your rent stabilization, 60% of the CPI would be not much more than that or less. So, but people moving into these mobile home parks don't understand the mobile home residency law, and they're not given those things until they actually buy the mobile home and have signed a rental agreement. So therefore, they're led to believe that they would be protected from increased rent raises, or should the landlord have to do some capital improvement on the property, he would lead them to believe that he could raise their rent and charge them for that. And there are certain specific guidelines for that, too, and pass-throughs, you know, are stipulated by the Rent Stabilization Board. So what happens is a lot of people get schmoozed into or under a false sense of security, sign a lease for longer than 12 months, and then what that does is take them out of rent stabilization. And if they don't know what's going on, you know, they eventually, if the landlord can do that to enough spaces in a small park, I'm not quite sure of the ratio right now, but then the whole park will be out of rent stabilization, and the landlord then can charge whatever the market will bear.
Thank you. Okay, is there...
One last comment, just to clarify things. Rights under the law, but until they're actually are in the house and a member of the community, the residency laws don't apply. I know it sounds strange, but that's what our council tells us.
Thank you. Chicken and egg question. Is there other public comment? Mark, did you want to make a last comment?
Excuse me for being allowed to turn my second turn, but I had to address the rent control issue. There is a big difference, as was stated, between a long-term lease and a month-to-month year contract or for a rental agreement. And unfortunately, as was said, the mobile home residency law does not have the teeth. And even this county has taken parks to court and have lost because park owners, they own the park, okay? And their ownership does take precedence somehow, and I don't know how, in the courts, even over the mobile home residency law. And it's a plight that mobile home owners need to get together and get some teeth into it. And I really can't emphasize that enough. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other public comment? Okay. Board discussion. Pamela?
Well, I guess I have to ask our legal counsel if mm-hmm. there is a way he can craft a provision to add to these our agreements.
Well, I reminding everyone that this is an agreement for the sale of water only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We certainly can put in a provision that would require that upon conversion of the property to any use other than the currently existing mobile home use, the development fees would kick in.
Right.
That's I don't see any particular problem with that.
Good.
A great deal of the other information that's been provided to you by the public, while it's helpful to understanding how the dynamics of the mobile home park and how this might all work, much of it is sort of calling the board to take action that you don't have the authority to take.
Yes, I understand that's out of our purview,
yeah.
But I would like the developer fees to kick in should there be any type of conversion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like, you know, that to come back as soon as possible. I think we need to proceed and get everything going, and it's just going to have to fall in and be put together like a puzzle here. It may take a while, but at least we could get it started and going. I had one question for Patrick about mm-hmm. the wheeling agreements. Do you foresee any problem getting those signed by?
No, I don't.
I didn't right. think there should be anything.
No.
Okay.
Bill, other comment or questions?
Well, I'd just like to reiterate what Pamela said. I think that getting these properly worded language and then get it back to our board at the next meeting would be appropriate.
Vern, comment?
No, I just think just give us a list of our options of what how to proceed from here. That's all we need at this point.
Okay. Barbara?
I have no further.
For that or penalty?
Well, any breach of the agreement gives the district the authority to shut off water.
Does that make the agreement null and void or something? It doesn't say that here. And this is
well, the agreement that says that we will provide water to you under certain circumstances. If you don't meet those requirements, then we no longer have an obligation to provide the water. Now, obviously, because of how essential water is, the district would be very slow to take that action.
Well, I think one of the things that is being indemnified against is the potential for like backflow of into the municipal system of Arroyo Grande. So there's public health issues and potential liability that it seems to me that in this case the indemnification is particularly important.
It is. I don't disagree with you.
Well, that brings to mind another question. Are the Collinses going to be pumping water from the well that has nitrates in it? Because they're talking about blending water here. Is that a possibility? Because we didn't even talk about that, and that's the thing that requires the backflow preventer.
Right. They could pump water. They could pump it for irrigation. I guess they couldn't pump it into the drinking water system, though, because they have it has to go through a health inspection. So I don't see that happening.
Would it require treatment in a separate storage facility? Is that?
I don't know. Help me out here, Phil.
Well, they're required to have in place backflow devices so that if there's any contamination associated with their well water system, it's isolated and would not get back into the Arroyo Grande system or anybody else upstream. Could there be a mechanical failure? Yeah, that's a possibility. But the obligation is in place for them to make sure that those devices are in place that will provide the level of safety.
Right now we're saying that if they violated the contract, we would cut off the water. Well,
we have the right to cut off the water.
We know, everybody sitting here knows, once you start giving somebody water to drink and live on, you're not going to cut it off. So is there some other penalty, dollar amount or something like that, can be put in there if they
Well, for instance, getting back to the question that President Hill raised, if the district wanted to, we could put in a provision for what's called force insurance that basically says if you fail to provide the insurance you're required to, the district has the ability to put the insurance in place and backcharge you for it. But that just begs the question, what if they don't pay the bill? Again, you're faced with the ultimate remedy of shutting off the water, and that's a, you know, politically and difficult thing to do.
If they don't pay.
That's probably not a major issue, but in this case, the backflow is preventing going into somebody else's system. And so there's outside liability, it would seem to me, that the district could perhaps be party to, and that's why I'm really concerned about the need for indemnification in this particular circumstance.
Well, you have the – I'm satisfied that you have indemnification in place. You also have provisions for insurance to back up the indemnification financially. I thought that your question and concern was directed to what if they just simply don't perform and, you know, let the policy lapse or something of that sort. And if that's your concern, we can add specific provisions allowing the district to place the insurance itself, which is actually implied in law, but many contracts have a specific provision for it, that would allow the district to place the insurance itself and then back charge them for it. And the back charge would then be subject to whatever other financial collection remedies the district has available, which might be placing a lien, shutting off the water, filing a separate action to try and collect the money.
That's what I had in mind, yes.
Okay.
I think it's a good point, though, that Pamela brought up about the cross feed. I think, can we put a provision in here that they can't hook their well up to our system? I think.
Well, it's basically Arroyo Grande's system because they're.
Right. Well, so that it can't commingle with our water.
Well,
right.
Remember, mechanically, what happens is the water comes through the Arroyo Grande pipeline.
Right.
It hits a connection where the meter and I believe where the backflow device is.
Right.
Maybe Phil could help me on this. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Where the backflow device is. And then everything on the other side of that belongs to them. It's their system. It's not our system. Mm-hmm. And their well is out there, and conceivably they could mix.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Can we not put, you know, it's their system, so they can give away rights, and can they not give away the right to hook it up to, you know, they have to disconnect the pump or something, or put in, if they want to use it for irrigation, they have to put in a different distribution system or something like that?
Well, I haven't looked at that specifically, but I, off the top of my head, I don't see any reason why not.
Okay. Cautions have been taken.
wells are used only for some strips of common area in the park, and it didn't make any sense to use filtered, you know, good water to irrigate yards. So they're separate, and the only thing we have our pumps and wells running is to irrigate maybe a couple of patches of lawn around our park.
So there's no connection between...
It's a completely separate system from the... Royal Grande made sure that we were separate when they hooked up. And you have to remember, they're wheeling the water, so it's coming from their system anyway.
Right.
So those precautions have already been addressed, and believe me, Royal Grande makes sure that, you know, we're not going to hook up our...
Halcyon Estates Park and the Grand Manor Estates are two separate parks. And while the Grand Manor Park has an arrangement with the Royal Grande to access his well, and he has a home in some area there that he, I guess, uses for watering from the well. And our park, we have not used our well since it was shut down, and we have... there's actually a, you know, it's shut off and requires a motor, and I believe the pipes are even shut off. They have a safety system to do that. But the way I understood it was that with the agreement with the Royal Grande, as he was explaining, that the connection comes right up to the meter at the property at the county easement. And there's a meter there, and there's no responsibility on your part past the meter, because the water distribution system throughout the park is owned by the park owner. So if there were any liability or any mixing of blending of waters, that would really be the liability of the park owner, because you have no responsibility beyond the meter where the water is being wheeled through the Rio Grande pipes. And that's how they couched that whole situation, because they would go to the meter and read the meter right at the connection, and there is the meter, but beyond that connection, everything is owned by the park owner. So maybe that will clarify that.
I understand that. I just don't want the park owner to have the authority outside this contract to combine water somehow.
We can accomplish
and,
that.
And we can do that.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
Okay, so I guess if I'm sensing the direction from the board would be to revise the agreement in accordance with the discussion. And
yeah, these are the notes I have. We would change the contract to include any kind of conversion as a trigger for the collection of the full developer fees. We want more specific language about which fees we're talking about. When I said developer fees, I intended that to mean all those fees, but we can mention them specifically which ones. I'm going to get these items on the LAFCO and Aurora Grande schedules, agendas, and then we'll change the contract so there'll be no cross connection between the wells and the water that we provide through the Aurora Grande system.
Add to that the provision that President Hill asked for, that we would be able to put in place insurance if they somehow let their insurance lap or don't place it.
Is that good?
Is that reasonable?
They all sound like good things to me.
Yes, I'm ready with that.
That works for me.
Okay.
Yeah, the only question is do you put them in and bring it back to us, or do we?
Oh, no, we'll bring it back. I did have a question. The wheeling agreements with AG, did you have an opportunity to look at those? Maybe we could proceed with those, because they're contingent upon the agreements being signed anyway. So if we can get AG to agree sooner rather than later, it'd be better. Then we don't have to worry about LAFCO.
If the agreement like this before, LAFCO wants signed documents to accept an application.
Right.
I have one other question, and I don't remember if there is a fee for changing spheres of influence.
Oh, there is.
Yeah. All right. Who's going to pay for that?
We require them to pay for it. That's part
the
of
agreements
that.
Require the agreement. Them to pay for it.
The right. parks will pay
yes.
for that?
Right. I don't see the fees that you're talking about in the wheeling agreements.
On the wheeling agreement, there is a
there is an Exhibit A that calls for the fees that Arroyo Grande is going to charge that we are ultimately going to pass through to the park owners.
Okay. We need to get them to give us those fees.
Right. Exactly.
And does that fee change? Does the wheeling fee change each year, Patrick?
No, I don't think it has.
No, it's a separate fee. Yeah. But it can change.
The city can modify.
So we need to also, say if they add or if they change the fee at any time, it would be passed on so that we aren't just stuck with the original fee?
If I recall, there's a provision that says other than in some unusual circumstances, they have to give us, it's 30 or 60 days notice whenever the fees are going to change so that we can do all the things we have to do with our billing.
Okay.
Okay, I have some comments on the water wheeling agreements, if you're...
Sure.
The first one is the agreement for the Collinses, and I believe the Collinses and the Nolenbergs are related, but the first page of attachment 4 for the Collins property, item paragraph E on page 1 starts out the Collinses and then it says the Nolenbergs.
Well, like most people do when they're word processing documents, you do one and then you swap out names, and I'll take the blame for that one because I did this myself.
Okay. Item, I guess it's E2 then on the second page is the same in the title of it.
I'm sorry, where are you?
Page 2 of the agreement with the Collinses. But page 2 starts out truth of recitals, and then the second one is city delivery of district water to Nolenbergs. I believe it should say Collins.
Got it. Okay.
Did you get that, Alex?
Yep, I got it. Okay. I got it.
The additional indemnification, I don't know if this is necessary or not, because you'll be changing that anyway, but it wasn't clear to me. It just says, it talks about both the district and the Collinses in the same sentence or paragraph, and then it says, shall bear any remediation costs required, but it should say Nolenberg in that case. With that, I don't have any other comments. Do any of the other board members have comments?
I do not.
So I'll bring these back also, but I'll send them to the city manager over there so they can start looking at them in advance.
Okay, so is that everything we need to do with this item tonight?
Right.
Okay, thank you all. We'll move on then to item 9, administrative items. 9A is ordinance resolution codification. I understand Alex has a report for us on status.
Yes.
Why don't we take a
I had hoped to be back tonight.
Excuse me, Alex. Let's take 5 minutes. We'll reconvene at 7:45. Okay, we'll come back to order, and we are on moving to item number 9, which is administrative items. We have consideration of a status update on this. Status of our ordinance codification project. Patrick, did you want to say introduction? Or?
District Council is going to discuss it.
You'll recall when I last spoke to you about this, I think late June, early July, what I anticipated doing was coming back to you probably at this meeting with a report. And at that time, I anticipated I would have most of the code done. I thought I might be short on one or two sections. The good news is that I've pretty well got the code done. We've got all the ordinances in code form. We still need to scrub through the resolutions. There are at least a few resolutions that need to be codified. There are many that don't. And what I'm doing now, this is the document, and what I'm doing now is going through and trying to do all those little things and catch typographical errors and a few misspellings, and there's a few inconsistencies in the way some things have been set up. So I'm trying to catch all of that sort of stuff on this go-through. I anticipate that we will have it for this. I may have it for the first meeting in October, but we will have it for the second meeting in October. And that was one of the primary things I wanted to talk to you about tonight, because as we put this together, it occurred to me that handing the board a inch-thick document to go through in a regular meeting like this might not be the best use of everybody's time. So I wanted to get some feedback from the board as to what the best way to do this might be, whether you wanted us to take it to a committee first, whether you wanted us to get it to you but maybe not actually deal with it at a public meeting until after you had a month to read it, or how you want to approach with how you want to go about doing that, whether you want to arduously go through the entire code, change those things as you go, and then adopt it all at once, a revised, quote, perfect, close quote, code, or whether, subject to making sure we've got all the typos cleaned out and, you know, it's grammatically correct and all of that, adopt this as is, and then as part of a ongoing process following that, try to examine different chapters in the code to see if there's something there as a matter of policy you want to change.
I would like to ask Pamela what her thoughts are on this, because since she was the driving force behind this.
Yeah, and there are a lot of deficiencies in those codes. And I'm thinking, I think we need to take them little bites at a time, and we wanted to start with the water. And it might be best to kind of have a special meeting to look at the water and have everybody involved, and then maybe take it to a committee to work on the dirty work, essentially. It's going to be maybe not as difficult as I think, but I think there are everybody has a lot of changes that they think might need to be added to this.
So are you saying you want to go through that process before the code is adopted as a whole? Or do you want to adopt the code as a whole and then go back and spend weeks, months, whatever it takes to...
I figure it's going to take years to do this at the rate we're going. We probably should adopt it, and so we can work with it, but I'd like to take it in little pieces. I'd like to see everybody get their licks in on it in small bits and bites. It will take us a while just to read it. Mm-hmm. Take us a while just to read it. So maybe you give it to us, give us a chance to look it over, and then we discuss it in open session and see how everybody feels about this.
Well, subject to whatever the board as a whole wants to do, perhaps I could propose this, that we will bring it to the board as a whole. You can discuss it as much as you want, get some sense of what you want to do. If you want to keep it at the board level and perhaps discuss it over one or two more meetings to tinker with a few things before you adopt it, fine. If after that first meeting you want to refer it to a committee to tinker with it a little bit and make sure it is what you think it is, and then adopt it, bring it back and adopt it, we could do it that way.
Okay.
What you're basically offering us is a restatement of our existing ordinances.
Right. And contemplated in that restatement is that substantively Everything has stayed the same, but you will see many grammatical changes to try and make sure that definitions are consistent, and some of the language is shortened where we thought we could shorten it without changing substance, and some sections are in different places now, but there is cross-reference in there that will show you where all those things came from.
And I think you tried to make...
It would seem to be that something of that volume, perhaps rather than the one-week lead we usually get with a, or, you know, several days lead with a standard board packet, we could bring it a month ahead of the meeting that we schedule it to make sure everyone has time to read it, or we could take it in pieces depending on the board's preference. If that would
well, I think the first time we put it in front of you, we need to put it in front of you as a whole.
Okay.
I will certainly exercise best efforts to give it to you in as you'll get it well before the Friday before the board meeting.
It looks like a novel.
You're talking maybe about doesn't three board read meetings like it. From then, right?
I'm planning on having it for the board meeting.
There's one on the 8th and the 22nd.
Yeah, no later than the board meeting of the 22nd. I may get it for the 8th, but I was talking to the law clerk that's been working with me on this morning, and when I said, what do you think about the 8th, he just rolled his eyes.
So we get it on the 22nd of October, and then it takes us a month to read it, right, Pamela?
Well, if we're gonna have it for the meeting on the 22nd, I think I probably have to have it in your hands no later than maybe the 13th. That gives you 10 days. And I don't think it's reasonable to expect you to read it cover to cover because you just couldn't absorb it all that quickly.
It's just a good start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds reasonable. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none. Is that how we want to proceed? Have the whole document presented at about the second October meeting? Okay. Thank you again, Alex. That's a big project, and we appreciate it. Item number 9B is review of district powers. Patrick?
A couple of meetings ago, we discussed district powers and basically just attempting to define what they are and how those and how we came to the determination of what the district power, how LAFCO came to the determination of what the district powers are. I've included documentation in here to kind of try to reinforce that. A couple of directors asked me to bring it back to the board to consider either adding powers or deleting powers to see if the board, if there was any sentiment on the board to do either. There was a suggestion that we should perhaps consider doing away with the park and rec power, and there's a suggestion that we consider adopting or adding a graffiti power. So that's open for discussion. That's what we're doing tonight.
If I may. We're not using the Parks and Rec right now, but if we did away with them and then in a couple of years the board decided that they wanted to do that again, then they would have to pay again to reactivate the fee. And that's, if it's in your power, why not just keep it?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure we're not using it. We just went through the...
On the east side of town, there's obstacles to come with that, but it's not 100% impossible. That park, when it was put in there where the community center is, was a real small park.
Well, by keeping the power, we're saving money.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of interesting how we get our powers because, you know, in the petition of formation, of course, it says water, sewer, lighting, fire, and drainage. The Parks and Rec power, it looks like what we do is we just take them and tell LAFCO that's what we have, and that's been accepted. I know it went before the voters in 1989 that we should have a Parks and Recreation power,
and that was turned down. That was the way to fund it back then. At this point, the way to actually fund it and get it going is to go to LAFCO, and they look at the ability of the ratepayers to fund a parks and recreation power. It's like a shell game. First we have graffiti and then we don't have it. Then we have parks and recreation and we don't have it. We use it sometimes for this and sometimes for that. And the parks and recreation power was essentially used for grants for the park from the Lucia Mar School District. And I don't say that that wasn't a good thing to do, but it also was for the tot lot, which, of course, is not there anymore. And now it's kind of in dormancy. So the Parks and Recreation Department is in dormancy now. It's very interesting how we can just say, okay, LAFCO, we have graffiti. And then we have police powers, and we have parks and recreation. And then we can tell them we don't have it, and then it appears that we do have it in LAFCO's estimation, but really, do we have it legally, and do we have it so we can fund it? Where's the funding from the parks and recreation coming from? It's coming from our general fund, as I understand it.
We haven't spent anything on park and rec.
But park and rec money would come out, I think, out of the same money that comes for the fire department. Is that not correct?
Any money that was used to fund parks and rec
came out of the property tax money that was designated for street lighting and fire.
Yes, so that's where the money comes from. We're just not allocating any right now. I think... Did we have nighttime basketball? This was long before my time and your time, Pamela, here. Was that in Parks and Rec, the nighttime basketball?
I don't believe so.
No?
I think that was done by one director.
One director?
Oceano Improvement
Did
Association.
Who got some money left them for parks? Or did maybe that went to a OIA? I don't remember for sure.
But
Parks and Rec, you know, it's a power. We're just, for the last few years in the budget, we said we need every penny to go to. When it comes back, the people say, no, they're not going to pay for it. It doesn't mean that Oceano doesn't have the lighting.
Yeah, I'd just like to take a minute to kind of clarify the legal aspect of it. We often get confused about what happened in 80 and what happened in 89, what happened in 93. Yeah, you know, we have a tendency to go back and dig up all these documents that, you know, show that we did something and then we took it away, whatever. In 2006, the legislature, because of the proliferation of special districts throughout the state, the legislature passed a special law, and it said every LAFCO was to go out and in some way determine what powers these special districts actually had, and they were to certify that those were the powers. And from then on, that's the way it was going to be, regardless of what happened in 1980, 1983, 1989, whenever. Okay? And that's what they did for us. And when they did that for us, the powers they identified were water, sewer, park and rec, fire, solid waste, and street lighting. So those are our powers. It's legal. It's legitimate. There's no question that that's the way it is. If we want to change that, we can. But it's not... You know, before 2006, it was kind of nefarious. It was kind of, you know, who knows. But now we know those are the powers.
And that's because we said we had them. And
that's correct, but that's the law.
Then just took our word for it, which is
that's the law, Pamela. We have
to
deal with the law. That's the law in this state. That's what I'm trying to make sure everybody understands.
And I'm saying we have no money for parks and recreation. We've used the power, and then we have not used it.
So if a majority of the board wants to go to LAFCO and get rid of the power, we can do that.
Yeah. See, it would seem to me that if I agree with your assessment, Patrick, that the revised law had LAFCO set in concrete, and however they came to the conclusion that they did is not our jurisdiction. It's their process and their whatever they put into that pot to determine what our powers are. They did in accordance with their charter, and we have what we have as of the date that they stated it. I agree with your assessment.
Okay.
And it would seem to me that, that Park and Rec, any power also going forward from that point, a district who wishes to activate a power has to do two things. First of all, has to state the desire to be in that business. Mm-hmm. And second, has to demonstrate to LAFCO that they have a source of funding to carry it on. So if the district were to give up a power, let's say Park and Rec, that we could do that. It probably wouldn't cost us much, but if we wanted to reactivate that power in the future, then we would have to go to LAFCO, tell them we wanted to do it again, and also come up with a source of funding to be demonstrated to their satisfaction. So it would seem to me that the onus of reactivating a power is going to be considerably greater than giving up a power that you already have.
Well, I'd like to ask Barbara, how did that come about? Because you were the, one of the signatories to
that. I was
that
the chairman
too.
Of the board.
Right.
And
how did they select the powers or determine the powers?
I believe that LAFCO staff dealt with the local entities themselves and got the powers from them and then presented us, so we accepted them.
Yeah, one of the primary ways is Attachment 2, which is the sphere of influence and city, whatever they call it, Municipal Service Review that was completed in 2003. Mm-hmm. They based most of their decisions on that document. And if you look through that document, that was created by LAFCO in conjunction with each district. This is one for Oceano specifically. Mm-hmm. And it has all those powers in there. It discusses those powers. It discusses, this is an excellent document, actually, if you look at it. David Church at LAFCO told me principally they use this document.
Okay.
Districts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's revolving.
When LAFCO was doing this, they were under the understanding that we had graffiti abatement at this time also, weren't they? Or was it the year before, 2005?
No. I think what I was trying to allude to before, they were under a lot of pressure, and they made some errors in the things that they were doing. If you read this document, there's not a word in here about graffiti abatement.
I noticed that, but what I was sent to, I was sent some documents by LAFCO, which said 2005 we did have graffiti abatement.
In 2006, a letter was sent back to LAFCO from this district saying we made a mistake. We don't have graffiti. We don't have police power, and whatever the other one.
Right.
Was. Yeah. That was all discussed at the last two meetings ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. It was a clerical error, is what it was.
And again, I think LAFCO took all of that under consideration in their process in the 2006 time frame when they redid all of this. And all of that was put into the pot and stirred up and officially acted upon by LAFCO. And the product of that is that we have what we have, as described.
I know sometimes history bothers people, but when Oceana was done, at the same time Grover Beach and Aurora Grande was done, because we're all right here together. That was how we did two cities and a special district together. They don't usually do that, but because of the boundaries and that. The other thing I want to talk a little bit about was the graffiti. We don't have that power now, but right now we always clean up our own, the graffiti that gets on district property is taken care of by the district, which, you know, that's our responsibility. If we put in, say, this board decides they want graffiti, and they go to LAFCO, and LAFCO decides that, A, you have the money to pay for it, and you have the staff to take care of it, so then you have the, you assuming, you know, you would have the power. But then I think, and I'm sure council can tell me if I'm right, then wouldn't we have to do an ordinance to say that people, if they have graffiti on their property, have to clean it up within so much time, or the district will clean it up and charge them like we do garbage?
Once you get the power from LAFCO to act in a certain area, then you have to adopt whatever appropriate ordinances or resolutions are required to implement that power.
Yeah. So
we'd
like,
probably draft another chapter to the code.
Yeah, it would be like the garbage thing of, if you don't take care of your garbage, mm-hmm. Patrick has to send out a couple letters before we can have it hauled away and charge him. Or the weed abatement maybe might be a better.
Well, I actually just thought Napomo considered doing that a couple of years ago. And in Napomo's discussions with LAFCO staff, LAFCO would require them to pass this ordinance. There's no requirement. You know, if we just did it and if LAFCO wasn't involved, there's no state law or anything that says we have to have an ordinance that requires property owners to clean their own graffiti up. But that's LAFCO's requirement because we don't have any other source of funds for doing it. And that's one of their key requirements is that you have to have a guaranteed source of funds. So their requirement is that we pass an ordinance that makes the property owner responsible. And in Napomo, they just decided they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to be responsible for enforcing those kinds of actions against the property owner.
Several of them have drainage, parks and recreation. One has a gas station, which we found out the other day at our CSDA meeting that they will no longer be having their gas station. At the Heritage Ranch.
There's an ordinance against graffiti, as they're not in the county, I think. You know, their ordinance is so if they catch somebody doing it, they do whatever they do and they get let go right away. But, you know, it's up to us to clean up our own, and hopefully the people will clean up their own messes.
Well, the sheriff's department said they had paint.
They have
paint available.
They have paint. They're willing to give you. It's donated from a couple of local paint companies.
Miners Hardware
and,
is one.
The paint store.
San Luis Paint
has given us paint or given paint in the past. That's available. They don't have the sheriff's office doesn't have the ability to do it themselves because they used to use people from the Honor Farm, and they had their volunteer patrol would bring them out and watch them, and those folks kind of are not able to do that anymore, and the sheriff's department, their deputies need to be patrolling, not watching these guys paint. But there is paint available right next door.
And the other thing is to watch your neighborhood and see if you see anything happening out there. And also, if you get graffiti, to clean it off as fast as possible. I've seen a lot just stay on and on and on. And that's unfortunate for our community to see that happening.
And if you see somebody doing it and you get their license plate number, you just have to call next door and tell them. I think the only time that they perhaps get in real trouble is if they do graffiti on a house of worship. Then the law is a little bit stronger. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they go to jail for that.
Is there public comment on this item for the various district powers? Mark.
Yes, Mark Wampler, Rio Grande resident. Okay, if I'm to understand that LAFCO did, or there was a mistake, if I understood correctly, that graffiti transportation and police department was not part, that was an error. Now, is graffiti abatement, would that be considered a latent or a possibility? That's what I want to know. Is it a possibility, a latent, that could be without the funding? But I understand
not.
You have to have a funding source. Okay.
Just to explain it, all powers are latent. All the powers specified in the code are latent unless action is taken to activate them. Okay. So action was taken to activate certain powers. When
those powers, as counsel said, we would have to, make the petition to LAFCO, which is telling them we want to do that. And second, and the most important and critical thing that goes with that is we have to demonstrate an ongoing source of funding to support that power being responsibly implemented.
Okay. I understood that actually a couple of years ago. And My opinion is if there's a will, there's a way, and I believe that if this board desires to have graffiti abatement powers, they can. And I think that's by redefining what graffiti is. I think we could redefine it as simply either a nuisance or a solid waste. Okay? Solid waste is under jurisdiction of the district. There are nuisance ordinances that apply with our garbage. Garbage being strewn in the alleys are a nuisance, and nuisances are under jurisdiction. I think it's a matter of saying, you know, graffiti is, well, it's vandalism, but it's a nuisance, and it's also solid waste. And I think by redefining it, you could tap into some funds that should be there. And also, secondly, while I do respect and thank the Sheriff's Department for their efforts in sending out Donner Farm inmates to paint various different kinds of colors to abate a damaged area, I think for a higher standard is to completely make the graffiti disappear, professionally speaking, make it disappear, match on color site. In other words, we make it to where it never happened, and I've done that personally, as this board is aware of. And for instance, the city of Santa Maria 2 years ago, their annual budget was only $6,000. But that was not professional. That was either a gray or a brown or a type of a tan that they used, or three basic colors they used. And Oceano has a large share of it. Now, Paso Robles has an ordinance. Of course, these are incorporated areas. Grover Beach does, as well as Santa Maria. So I would like to see the board move forward and get together for the sake of the community. We have community enhancement committee get together and say, can we define this as a solid waste, define it as a nuisance, and come up with a definition that will bring in those funds. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment on the item?
Do you add to the garbage pull up paper?
I'll make it quick, Mary Lucy. Yeah. I actually think that we should try to provide as many powers as possible that's ordered by LAFCO. And you know, graffiti is, it's a pretty simple problem, you know, and it's really kind of, it's already here, abatement. You know, there's free paint next door, right? We have several programs, community-based organizations in the area that would be only too happy to offer up some of the guys to help go and paint as long as somebody reported that, you know, that it had happened in the area. It's an eyesore. We're trying to get things cleaned up and you know, so we have more of an appeal to the community. There's a lot on Front Street between, and there is, you know, pockets of, I don't like to use the word waste, but, you know, pockets of funds that people think, you know, are valuable projects that can be narrowed down. But this really wouldn't cost us anything. And so I would strongly encourage you to put that nuisance paperwork in and move forward in making this a better place that Oceano will look.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, hearing none, is there further board discussion?
I think it clarified it for me. I think that, I mean, if we keep parks and recreation, we just don't have a budget for it. We don't have anything we can use for funding that particular thing. So it will just sit there. We're struggling with rate increases that are going to be coming up because of water. We're struggling with consolidation of the fire department and the cost involved there. And it's just not getting easier. It's very hard for people to be able to make a living. Food prices have gone up, everything's gone up, and we're putting heavy burdens on people in this, our ratepayers. So we keep it, I guess, and then just struggle along. But we will be seeing rate increases for water later this year. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that's going to happen. And you'll hear bad news from me about Zone 3. So I just wanted to let people know that it's not looking good out there. And we're going to have to pull in our horns, and we're going to have to really, each individual person is going to have to take responsibility for the things that are going on their property. You may have to paint your fences. You may have to sweep your streets. You may have to do those kinds of things that make your property look better. So it's going to be a lot on us. And that's just all I have to say.
Bill, comment?
Well, Parks and Recreation, I mean, it's not something I don't think we want to get rid of it. If we're ever able to do a park on the east side, we would need a grant, as we did with the tot lot, to do a park, and you know, that's down the road. Also with the community center, I don't know if we can get rid of it. So it's really, I don't look at it as being an issue to try to get rid of it at this time.
Vern, comment? No, Barbara?
No, I don't have anything else to say.
The only thing, the comment that I would make is that the jurisdictions that were cited as having graffiti ordinances are the cities who also have the police power to enforce the ordinances that they put in place. There's two ways to approach graffiti. One could be, as some jurisdictions do, charge the target property for the cleanup. In other words, they fine the victim. And that seems to me to be counterproductive. Another option would be to offer it be a reward-type program rather than a fine the victim type
maybe
program.
Maybe it falls under vandalism then, maybe?
Vandalism, but it's more than vandalism. And I would hope that the public recognizes that every member of this board is opposed to graffiti. The idea is what is reasonable for us to do about it, what is reasonable for the greater jurisdiction of the county to do about it, who has enforcement. When you go down to a small enough package, one property owner, you know, we could take graffiti and spread the cost over one property owner for all the enforcement and everything else, and it would be cost prohibitive. He could paint his house every day for what it would cost. Or it could be spread jurisdictionally, and the larger the jurisdiction, the lower the unit cost. And that's why it seems to me that perhaps a thing that we should consider, what the board should consider if we want to make maybe a recommendation for how to proceed, is to consider whether we want to make a unified board recommendation to the county to proceed with a graffiti ordinance and how that might be structured. And we could offer that in comment to the Board of Supervisors. That would seem to me perhaps a start that would address the issue and would avoid the necessarily somewhat high cost of implementation and the enforcement. In Oceana, which has no police powers, the enforcement thing becomes quite an issue. The Sheriff's Department does a great job with the resources that they have and the law that exists, and they've interceded and stopped graffiti, and they've apprehended some of the people that are responsible, and they're out there every day doing that for us with the existing vandalism laws and so forth. But I think perhaps they could use a boost from the jurisdiction here to advise the county that, you know, perhaps that's such a serious problem, not only here but in the rest of the... It's not an Oceana problem that's limited to Oceana. The problem exists in the Pomo and all the other areas in the county. So perhaps a countywide approach would be something that the board might want to advocate on behalf of the citizens of Oceana. With respect to Park and Rec, we can't forget that the county also has Park and Rec authority here. OCSD shares a jurisdiction, kind of like perhaps we have a drainage basin that somehow in history ended up in our sphere of influence, I guess. County has other, all of the rest of drainage in Oceano is county responsibility. So similarly with Parks and Rec, we have a Park and Rec authority that we're not currently exercising, but we have the authority to do so. The county maintains the county parks. All of the county parks are being maintained. Unfortunately, they're all on the west side of the railroad. Other options, just because OCSD, we have the authority but not the funds, we can still have some, we still have parks here. We still have an authority that's collecting money that could, that when the county comes, when it comes time for the county to spend those funds, I would hope that OCSD would have some recommendations on behalf of the community of how this might be spent. So that's all that I have. Is there anyone who would like to make a motion, or are we happy where we are?
I move that at this time we do not ask to change any of our district powers.
We need to do that as a motion, or just
it's a motion.
Move it on.
The motion.
But doesn't doing nothing accomplish the same thing?
It was a discussion.
Well, it can die for lack of a second, or that's what you guys want.
I don't care. It don't make any difference to me. I think it's the same thing whether we do nothing or we do it. Do that.
Well, I'm reading the recommendation.
The staff recommendation is
that we
do take some
that
action.
That we take some action.
I don't. Either way, if you take no action, it's the same as what you just moved. Either way, it's
okay.
It does.
Is there a sense of consensus among the board that we may want to request graffiti assistance from the Board of Supervisors?
I think I have to remove my motion first, don't I, before you do that? Or did it die? I guess it died for a lack of a second.
Yeah,
go ahead, Jeff. Yes, I think it would be good for the board to determine from the county if they have a graffiti ordinance, and if not, encourage them to do so.
But not for us to ask assistance, for us to do anything.
No, for somebody on this board to ask the county.
To advocate on behalf of the community for the Board of Supervisors to strengthen the existing graffiti abatement programs that they have in
if
place.
If they have one,
sounds good.
I think we could ask the county to do that by a letter from all the board and have all the board sign it. And
I think that would be very
appropriate.
Go to
very
them
great.
That way because whatever they can do to help, we need it.
Very good.
It sounds like then the consensus of the board is we'd like to write a letter to the county expressing our support of the Sheriff's Department's efforts and asking the supervisors to strengthen the graffiti abatement program as much as they can. We might want to consult with the punitive ordinance. That's my opinion, that an ordinance that requires the property owner to go to the expense of abating something that he's the victim of seems to me to be punitive, where I think increasing fines and making the perpetrator, or in some cases the perpetrator's parents, pay the cost of removing graffiti seems to me to be a more positive and equitable suggestion.
I think we had talked earlier with the Sheriff's Department about the court system, and if they did require the perpetrators to
recompense the people who were vandalized, and they don't do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we should, where we should go to ask that happen.
I think they don't do that because there's no ordinance currently requiring it, as is implemented in Los Angeles, for example.
Well, that would be my idea, is that the perpetrators would pay for it. Actually, I'd like to see the perpetrators do the painting up and cleaning up. But, of course, that takes a unified approach from the county, the sheriff's department, the community, and everybody. And
That's what I'm prepared to advocate, and I would ask that the board join in.
You know, I...
And the public, thank you.
Looking at this a little bit further, would it be possible for us to at least send a letter? There's 15 districts here that are on this LAFCO Exhibit A here. None of them have weed graffiti abatement. But including them in possibly all everyone getting together, going to the county,
perhaps
Apple Beach.
Perhaps we'd want to do that through the local chapter of the CSDA.
That would be a very effective use of that.
Yeah. Good suggestion.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the involvement by all the county will give more power for this.
Well, okay, so would the board like to wait until the next CSDA meeting and put that on as an agenda item? No.
We asked to have it put on the next agenda, which is in November.
Yeah, I'm just thinking it may be more forceful to the county rather than you showing up, Jim, to have, you know, 15... board president show up and say this is a concern.
I'd like that. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea too.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill.
Uh huh. It was a great CSDA meeting. I learned a lot. So.
Okay, good.
Okay, moving on then. Number 9C is review of district development procedures.
Yeah, this is an item that's been in play since I've been here. Staff just has not had time to develop written procedures to follow during...
It's real long-holding, back here. I apologize if this can't hear correctly.
Okay. This is an item that staff has been looking at for at least a year, probably longer than that. It's something we need to do. I was approached by one director to have an open discussion about what the...
...that kind of got this going. And what led me to this was we found out that there have been some instances where we didn't get street lighting in particular subdivisions. Maybe we have too narrow a fire road, that there hasn't been an oversight kind of process for this or procedures. Vern on OHAC and now Barbara will say that they really do not have anything other than recommendations you can use. But we do have will serve letters and we do have fire letters. So those kinds of things could be... We could develop a procedure and a process for working through developments and making sure everything is fair and equitable on each of them. I know that the fire department in particular mentioned that they needed coordination with fire and water because those two areas have to interact for the protection of the property owner when they do a development. Something that we also thought might be possible would be a consent agenda for those kinds of things to come before the board. Something that is in the open, you could meet the developer. If there were something special, like a special provision, that should really come before the board. It shouldn't be made by one person or two persons in the district. There might need to be supplemental changes to our report. Our report is very, very sparse when it talks about will serve letters. You could add a date when it came in, and maybe three or four columns so you know what's going on with it. But particularly, what I don't want to see happening anymore is ratepayers taking up the slack for allowing developers to get off the hook for not putting streetlights in. We're the ones that end up paying for every one of those streetlights that should have been put in during a development. Those streetlights cost us $6,000 apiece. Those kinds of things, and street lighting is our power, those kinds of things should be looked at and should not be happening anymore. So I just want it open, above board, and I want people to see it. And it doesn't have to be a particular committee so much, maybe as a consent item, but to develop procedures so that there is a particular procedure to follow, that the fire and water people get together and discuss and do it in a timely manner. So just those are the kinds of things I would, that's what I put up.
Are you kind of saying like a list that says on there?
A checklist kind of thing.
Yeah, a checklist kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like since streetlights is something you brought up, so like streetlight is on it, and if it's an individual house, it's probably not a streetlight. Right.
That's true. It may or may not be.
Yeah, so it would be not applicable or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, so everything that they think of, you know, that goes on the list and it either is done or isn't done, but you know, say we would like this looked at.
We can. Okay. But, again, what you've got to recognize with the advisory council, it's strictly advisory.
Oh, I
and
realize that.
Yeah. I know you're well aware of how things work, Barbara. You've been here for
ever.
You're our senior member here, and you're very knowledgeable. But for the benefit of the public, how the system works is that the advisory council is strictly advisory, and it goes to the supervisors, the planning commission. They may not heed it. They're going to look at what their laws require, and within the county and the planning commission. The planning commission may not be concerned with streetlights. They may not have a rule that allows them to put them in or not. I don't know, because the purview of streetlights, the power of streetlights, is here at the OCSD. And so I think we're the only ones that can either require or not require them to be put in. I don't know if the Planning Commission is even able to do that, much less concerned
planning
about
department?
Planning or, department, sorry, yes.
Yeah, but I think I want to say this correctly and not offend anybody, but I think we need to be sure that when the plans are coming before the Oceano Advisory Committee, that if they think a street light should be on there and they don't see it in the picture, that they should note that they feel that that's missing. You know, it may not get taken care of, but at least we can look back and say we tried.
Right. The other thing about it, I believe, is that by the time it gets to us at the Oceano Advisory Council, they already have their will serve letter. Usually they have the will serve letter at the OCSD. And so once they have that, there's no, there really isn't anything to force them to put that in.
I have a question for staff. Is the will serve letter, does it just guarantee water and sewer? Is that
water, sewer,
fire. And street lighting. Oh, street lighting is on that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And that initial letter also says that we further requirements may come to light when we see the engineered plans, because when they request that initial will serve letter, we don't necessarily see the engineered plans that are finally submitted to the county for approval.
But if does staff think it would help people coming in if they had a checkoff list?
Absolutely.
Because I don't think developers know, but the individual who's building one or two houses, it would really help to have the checkoff list.
Absolutely. And even if you're building one house, but it's at the end of a dead-end street and it has alley access, it was really quite helpful to have admin, fire, and the utility departments all
really could be diverted or helped along and worked on so that their time isn't spent doing that and they're spent talking with the right person. Perhaps the pre-op meeting, the checklist, those kinds of things developed for anybody coming in so they know what to expect.
I think we've developed the topic enough that we can ask for public comment at this time. Karen?
Karen Whitehouse in. You may have some problems because I think some of what you're talking about, somebody goes to the county and gets a ministerial building permit for a single house. Do they have to come through the whole process here again when they've got a county permit? So there is a duplication that both agencies have to okay it. Okay, I figured it was just the county.
Thank you. Mary?
Just a quick question on process. So you're saying that if somebody applies for a will serve letter for an address that, say, already has service or something like that, there's no sign-off on the will serve letter after they've fulfilled all their obligations? There is a sign-off.
There's a final.
And there's a walkthrough, right?
Right.
No. So how does the street lighting slide through? If there's a sign-off and there's a walkthrough, how does it get through?
Perhaps because there's no checklist.
There really, truly is not a checklist?
That's
right. Wow. I'll make one. I'll volunteer to make one. Anything you do, you have to have, if you're going to mandate that people, you know, for example, I live on a corner. I can't budge because I need to put in $85,000 worth of curbs, gutters, and sidewalks. $85,000. I can't have a single car garage. Now, if I built that garage without that $85,000 bond and $77,000 worth of cement, right, you're telling me that they wouldn't come through with a checklist and say, okay, she did this, she did this. Oh, she missed that $85,000 expenses. She did this. There's not that kind of checkoff
list. I think
list.
You're mixing apples and oranges here. The county checks the construction to ensure that it's complete before you get the occupancy certificate. So
the
district issues a will serve letter that says we can and will provide these services. The county won't issue a building permit until you have that will serve letter. You then go and you construct all the improvements, and the county checks those improvements that you were mandated to construct. I think that the checklist...
So they never
the
come
checklist,
back to the district?
The checklist issue is a checklist when the district is reviewing your will serve letter to make sure all the issues that are necessary to be considered when the district's getting ready to issue you the will serve letter are covered.
But they don't, but my understanding, and clarify me if I'm wrong, President.
To everyone.
Great, thank
and
you.
And the checklist should help that.
That you're absolutely right, Ms. Dean. Thank you.
Other public comment? Sure, Karen.
Karen Whitehouseian. Now, do they pay a fee to the district for that will serve letter as well?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make sure about. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can recall my brief stint with the O'Shannon, at that time, O'Shannon Housing Advisory Committee, referring to one unnamed very large project here in O'Shannon. As I recall, we had one visit from the developer. We had a rough sketch, a plot map. Here are the lots. Here's a little park over here. and we were asked to stamp our approval on it. We had no, we weren't presented with any requirements with whether it be a street lighting or any other improvements that should have been included with that presentation. It was a very good presentation, but just lacked the details, and as was mentioned, the street lighting issue. So I think there is an issue when these projects do come through the advisory council that there are specifics in how they're going to be complied with, street lighting and so forth, and that those fees are acknowledged and will be paid and part of what's being reviewed before the advisory council. Now, yeah, there's a lack of jurisdiction being an advisory council. They can only advise, and whether planning or supervisors approve it or not, that's up to them. But there needs to be a full disclosure to the advisory council with all these requirements, and so there's not this not slipping through the cracks there. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, hearing none. Further board discussion, Pamela?
I guess the next thing we should do is send it to an ad hoc committee or some committee to work on this, if that would be the board's pleasure. That's what I'd like to see happen.
Bill?
I agree.
Vern?
One point of clarification. When something comes to the advisory council, it doesn't come with a list of statements or list of this should be or this shouldn't be. Or it needs to have this or it doesn't need to have that. It's up to the advisory council to look at it and see how it fits in with the community and the development plans within the community. And if someone on the advisory council feels that there's maybe a need for street light or signal light or whatever they may think that there or a traffic study or what, that may be brought up. And then at that point, it would be addressed. But if nobody brings it up, it's not going to be brought to the advisory council saying, hey, look at this or look at that one specific issue within the item. The item is brought to us, and we look at how it fits within the community. What I'm thinking is on this issue or this item, maybe the best way to do it is to, however the board feels is the best way, the best setting to do that in, whether it's in a committee of two or back at the board or whatever the rest of you would like.
Barbara?
What do you think?
No opinion.
There are many other CSDs that have the procedure in place, and it might be using those for an example and checking with staff to see what else they'd like to see in there and coordinate with them. I don't think it's a big to-do, to get this together. It's fairly simple. We have a few jurisdictions, and those should be addressed.
I think Director Dean's suggestion is an outstanding one that points up something that has been a weak point in our administration for probably the duration of my tenure on the board so far, that there is confusion. The major developers in the area are familiar with the process of interfacing with the county and the district and what the overlapping responsibilities are. The average person who wants to do a small development from one house to maybe a PUD or something like that is probably less familiar with it. And the lack of consistent, published, upfront information is disturbing to me and has been for some time. So I share your concern, Pamela. And I would like to see perhaps this be referred to the Water and Sewer Committee and taken up at a meeting in the very near future of perhaps the Water and Sewer Committee that could help staff or get this should be done in conjunction with staff and offline from the main board. So I would think that a committee assignment would be appropriate, but I want to see it happen in a committee assignment in the near term, not because we've talked about this a couple of times in years past and nothing's come forward. So I think it's time for the board to insist that it come before a committee that can take some action on it and bring back a recommendation to the full board to proceed. But I think this is something we do need to go forward with. So I endorse your proposal.
Do we need a?
I don't think so. I agree. I think that's a good action, and staff will schedule a water sewer committee. I think I would like staff to put together just a real rough outline of a checklist first. So maybe we'll wait a week or so before we do that.
A staff report for the assistance of the water and sewer committee would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds good.
Does that conclude that item?
Yes.
Can we take a short break?
Yes, let's take a 10-minute break. We'll come back at 10 after. To order. Item number 9D is committee assignments. This is a presentation by the ad hoc committee in consideration of committee assignments that I presented at the last meeting. Patrick?
The committee met on September the 19th. I provided minutes of the committee meeting, and I'm going to let the committee members discuss what their findings were. Okay, I'll say it again. The committee met on September the 19th. I've included minutes of the meeting with the agenda packet, and I'm going to let the directors on the committee discuss what they found.
Okay, that would be Director Dean and Director Dahl.
So. Okay, do you want me to or you want
to? I'm going to let you because you went through a lot of work putting this spreadsheet together.
Okay. Basically, what we did was let's do this properly. We should go to public comment before we go to go through all this.
Is there public comment on this item?
Mary Lucia Chiano. My understanding was, and I did attend the last meeting, that under this, correct me if I'm wrong, not an ordinance, but a recommendation from the subcommittee. Yeah,
A resolution of the board.
Resolution. The resolution stated that you had to have picked core committees and outside committees within 30 days of passing the resolution. Now, this, and that would have made your last meeting the 30 days. Twice during that meeting, the attorney was asked for legal advice to see if there was a violation of the resolution, and he stated twice, and you can review the tapes, that yes, there was a legal that it wasn't in accordance with the regulations, but that the board, and this was strictly his opinion, that the board could move forward anyway, even though he stated twice that, yes, it was that it was a violation in the ordinance that had been written. So when I looked in the minutes, and this created chaos that that really showed very poorly on the public access channel, if anybody had a chance to watch it. But this caused, kind of a stir among the board, and then Director Dahl made a motion that it go back to an ad hoc committee. And my understanding is that when an ad hoc committee is charged with a task and the task is completed, that the ad hoc committee is a null and void, and that it's liquidated because the task had been completed. You had adopted this regulation, and so it would automatically make the committee over with because you had fulfilled the requirement in front of you. So still,
I don't know that there was. I hadn't reviewed that particular point. As far as Robert's Rules of Order, the district has not adopted Robert's Rules of Order, so the board bylaws are independently published. As far as the board voting to ignore a resolution, that's what was done the last time.
So, I guess procedurally, then how could you have a committee come back with a recommendation? If the task was to develop the ordinance and it was done, the resolution and it was done, is there still a committee?
The board voted to refer the item to that committee.
So the committee's still standing?
I would have to say yes.
Okay.
And I'd like to speak to Mary's question about the 30 days. It does say a 30-day adoption of this resolution. However, we have found that in the assignment of the committees that were listed that President Hill gave us, he did not follow the rules that were required in the ordinance. So this is what we're going to go through tonight, the rules that are in the ordinance, how those match up, who should be available, and there is a spreadsheet in your package, and Vern will be going through that. We looked at past history of committee members. We looked at the director's request. We looked at the requirements of the new resolution and the new rules of order, and we put that together. So that's what Vern is going to be talking about tonight. If you have a resolution that isn't followed, you do have to follow the rules. This is what all of these things we've been talking about tonight is about. Follow the rules, make it equal and fair. The essential part of this resolution was to rotate directors in various committees so that everyone would have a chance to work through the committees, not two directors being installed in the same committees time after time. So this is our first go at following the rules, and I'm going to turn it over to Vern.
And that's basically, are we done with public comment?
Is there other public comment on this item? Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Vern, go ahead.
Okay, and that's exactly what we did. We just went through, we interpreted the rules of order. And then in interpreting the rules of order, we looked at who was in what, who were the current members. And we looked at the recommendations that the president had received. And the only recommendations we didn't have was from the president himself. And so the places that he had put himself in for committees, we considered those to be his recommendations. And then we looked at then basically.
Is this the spreadsheet you're talking about, Mr. President? Is this the spreadsheet that we're working off of?
I can't see it from here, but I believe so.
It's dated September 17, 2009.
The one yes, that's
okay. Thank you.
That is the one that's dated September 17, 2009. Seems to me we had this conversation a year ago, but that's neither here nor there.
Older than I thought it was.
So now that we've clarified that, Vern, you want to continue?
That's basically the report. That's what we've done. We've turned it back over to turned it back after the ad hoc committee, and it's been in the packet. So at this point, we're just back at the point of the recommendations coming to the board.
Vern, you may want to, or you want to go through and explain what we did here so that people can understand and how it works with the rules and what we did with the director's request.
Okay, sure. I can further explain that. Rules basically state, and I had it, let's see. Yeah, I have the rules. I'm just, you know, they're two pages just looking for the right rule for why we did things. Okay. And director requests, okay, rule, you know, paragraph 1.4H7 states, other appointments will be rotated on an annual basis if a director requests assignment to a specific committee. And so, therefore, where requests were made, then that's, and that's for the outside of the core committees where they were made, then that director got those committees and, or, you know, would be required to be put on those committees. Then, and then there was a fire oversight committee, and that had to be a member of somebody on the fire committee. So that was had ended up having to be, you know, one of the two, and only one of those people was able to serve on that. So that became a you know, an automatic. And within the core committees, we looked at rotation, which was required, and then we looked at request, and so whoever had the request ended up with those committees, and then we looked at the rotating of them, and if there were no requests, then we just left that in as possible possible appointments. And so we left a list of, you know, we basically left it under two columns, who would be required to be put in there based on their requests, and who's available when there were no requests.
County Sanitary District. And at least one core appointment will be made to each director unless the director declines the appointment. No more than two core appointments will be made to any one director, and core appointments will be rotated annually with no director assigned to the same core committee except the sanitary district for 2 years in a row. So we came up with finance. The current members are Hill and Mann. Directors' requests for finance committee were Dahl and Dean. And because those directors requested that, we felt they were required to be appointed, and that would be Dahl and Dean. Fire committee was Hill and Mann. The director requests for that were Bookout, Dean, and Mann. Required appointees, because Mann is already serving, was Bookout and Dean. Personnel, Hill and Dean. There were no director requests for the personnel. The possible appointees are Mann, Bookout, and Dahl. The sanitary district is the president, so it's President Hill. Fire oversight, we have put Bookout in fire oversight. He is able to attend those meetings on Friday afternoons. Water and sewer is not a core committee, and so those director requests would be the overriding factor. Currently, water and sewer is Dahl and Bookout. The director requests for that particular committee were Bookout, Dean, and Mann. The required appointees are Mann and Dean. Bookout's already has already served on that committee. Community enhancement, Dean and Bookout. The director request was Dean. The required appointees was Dean. Possible appointees are Bookout, Hill, Dahl, or Mann. The OAC, current member is Dahl. The director requests were Mann and Dahl. The required appointee was Mann. Dahl was already on the OAC. So that's how we came up with those requests. We fit them into the requests of the directors as much as possible, also complying with the rules of order about core committee appointments.
I have one question, if I may. Wouldn't you also have to put Mr. Book out on the San Luis sanitation, because in your rules of order, the president and the vice president are on that?
The vice president as the alternate?
Yes.
The vice president would be the alternate according to the rules.
Yes,
that's correct.
He should be included as alternate.
Yeah, and I think he already is alternate, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so
we didn't. Does that count as two core committees?
Not as an alternate.
Oh, all right.
I don't think. I mean, we don't have it defined that way, one way or the other. That would be a discussion. We didn't list the committees that things didn't change on. But I did notice one other thing here that it looks like for personnel, we probably would. It looks like it would require a man to be on there.
No, thank you.
Okay. The
Is that not? Are we leaving nothing to the president's discretion? The personnel committee. I think we have had some interest there. I'm also concerned with the rule violation regarding the Fire Oversight Committee, whereas Director Bookout's the current incumbent and may not be appointed to that again. I suppose take these under advisement and come back with a comprehensive reassignment at the next meeting.
Well, you know, when you talk about the oversight committee that I'm on, it's more important that someone that's on the fire committee be on the oversight committee. Whoever's on the fire committee needs to be on the oversight committee.
Okay. And the no director assigned the same core committee 2 years in a row is for core committees, and core committees are listed as finance, fire, and personnel, and the sanitation district, not as the fire oversight committee.
President Hill, I have a question.
Karen, yes.
Karen Whitehouse, and how many actual members are going to be on each of these committees?
The core committees are two members. It would be a violation of the Brown Act for three directors to be on a committee. It would have to be noticed as a regular board meeting.
Yes, that was going to be my question. So there's just one or two, or two on each.
That is correct. The sanitation district has one representative because it's a three-member board
with a
director from each of the member jurisdictions.
I understand that. Okay, thank you, because with all these names, I find it very confusing. Thank you.
But nothing stops any director from attending any committee as a member of the public.
Yes. Basically can't comment, but can observe, I suppose. The Oceano Advisory also has a single member. That's an observation and reporting function for the board, so there's one member for that. The other committees that recommend district policy each have two board members. Does that clarify your question? Thank you. Okay, I will take these under advisement and have revised recommendations at the next meeting.
I'd like to compliment the ad hoc committee. They did a great job in what they've done here. It's fair and equitable. I'm very impressed.
Well, I do note that the committee has the committee's made recommendations for, I think, virtually, and due to the complexity of these rules, that virtually every potential series of appointments would run afoul of one of the rules or another. So we come down to then a hierarchy of the rules. And I do note once again that the required, if you will, assignment removes Director Mann from the fire oversight or the fire committee, which again was one of my concerns, that this was an orchestrated attempt to remove Director Mann from the fire committee. And I will go on record as saying that I believe that is bad policy for personal efforts or personal dislikes to influence board decisions of this nature. I know where it came from, and I guess the problem will correct itself.
I'm wondering why we aren't making the decision tonight and getting on with it instead of having it come back next week.
Well, obviously you know that as the members of the committee that it takes time to do these things.
It takes time to do these appointments?
Proper appointments.
Okay, well, this came out in Friday's packet. That's mm-hmm. plenty of time, one would think. It's mm-hmm. enough time to read the entire packet and go through the rest of this.
You know, I read an article a while back. We read it was June 19, 2007. Oceano Fire Chief Steinhauser resigns, claims he was forced out. It's in the TPR. And this doesn't really pertain a lot to it, but it has some insight with your comments earlier about Director Mann being on the fire committee. And you've reinstated that several times. But this article says, Michael Steinhauser said he was issued an ultimatum by Oceano Community Service District President Jim Hill and Director Barbara Mann. They said, I had a choice. They were either going to terminate me or I was going to resign. And I resigned, said Steinhauser. Jim, on a meeting 7-9-2008, you stated, in no case is the board ever cut out of any decision of the management body of this district. You know, I think you can make the decision tonight.
Well, let's address this right on point, Bill. Yes, I did offer the, if you recall, the business before the board at the time of that meeting, it was renewing the contract for the fire chief. And I, out of respect for the chief's service here, I told him that it was my overwhelming feeling that his contract would not be renewed. And rather than have him suffer the embarrassment of non-renewal of his contract potentially, I offered him quietly the opportunity to resign or a notification that he...
If something's an injustice is taking place in a community, it's your right to stand up to that injustice. Jim Hill, that's exactly what I'm doing. I am standing up to an injustice of this community. In 2005, Jim, so let's talk about this. In 2005, you had a meeting here with Caltrans and OCSD, and that meeting was talked about, and no action was ever taken place. So when you bring up my lawsuit, bring up the facts that you took no action in that 2005 meeting that you said you were going to take action in.
Mr. President, will you allow public comment for just one more moment?
Please, Mary.
Okay. Mary Lucy Oceano, I think it's very fascinating, the lawsuits and all that, since, you know, our insurance premiums are most likely going to go up because so far Mr. Bookout's lawsuits have cost us over $40,000 in court. $40,000 to the taxpayers of Oceano. So what I would ask Director Dean is that when you look at these assignments as the committee chair, right, I ask that there be no financial ties to any decisions that Director Bookout sits on, any of these boards. No place where there's any finances involved, because we have a director who is elected, who has chose to sue the community. So you put him on committees that oversee funding, and it's an inherent conflict of interest. Now, whether it is or perceived as worse than a conflict. So I'm asking you, as a steward of our taxpayer dollars, not to have a director who is suing the community that elected him to oversee any of our fiscal money. Thank you.
Okay. Alex, can you clarify to Ms. Lucy?
I have the recent newspaper.
If you've charged $40,000?
Mr. Seamus is not defending us in your lawsuits against the district.
Very good. Thank you. You understand.
Again, more to the point, I think it's the fact that I have an email here from the general manager from Monday, April 14th. The county did not approve Bookout as the alternate to Zone 3 because he has a pending lawsuit that involves the county. And so the committee appointment process here, as my original point, has been gyrated unnecessarily already by that.
Okay. Well, I think we got a little bit off subject here, and I realize that the June 19, 2007 letter written to the TPR staff where Michael Steinhauser was complaining about Jim Hill and Barbara Mann and ultimately his ultimatum for quitting brought up a lot of other emotions here. It'd be nice to get back onto track.
Well, I will bring back.
There's not many decisions to be made here.
I think it should be dealt with tonight. We put this off and put this off and put this off. Emotions are running high. This has been a particularly difficult kind of thing to do because we're asking for rotations, what we've, and we wanted it to be fair and equitable and match what was going on with the rules of order. We felt we gave the president ample selection here, and we did follow the rules. There are several that we can just check with people, check on what they want to do, and stick them in the committee assignment. I really do not want to wait another 2 weeks to go through this turmoil again.
As a consensus of the board, I agree with both Vern and Pamela.
Therefore, according to the pleasure of the board, I'll make the committee appointments at this
Thank
time,
you.
Subject to board approval.
Mr. President, on the personnel, when there's no people that want to be on that,
yeah, there's no one has requested it, so therefore it's in the purview of the president.
Perhaps,
I'll take it as that someone could decline, but I would take that to be a choice that I could make from the possible appointees that are
all right.
That are not the current incumbents in that position.
Hold on. The other thing is that that because Mann is not on one of these core assignments, she would have first, it would be required, she would be one of the requirements, and that was not in there.
One requirement is that she
I said no, but if
that
I
she be assigned to a core committee.
Okay.
Right, so that would be one that was there.
A little more difficult than you thought, huh, Vern? Okay, the Finance Committee is currently myself and Director Mann. The requests are for Directors Dahl and Dean. I would appoint Directors Dahl and Dean to the Finance Committee. The Fire Committee is currently myself and Director Mann. The director requests are Bookout, Dean, and Mann. I also note that Director Dahl could be appointed. I will appoint Director Bookout and Director Dean to the Fire Committee, and I will assign Director Dean to the Fire Oversight Committee. The Personnel Committee is currently myself and Director Dean. I would ask Director Mann and Director Dahl to be on the Personnel Committee. The Sanitation District is an automatic appointment. The Fire Oversight Committee, I've appointed Director Dean. The Water and Sewer Committee, the current incumbents are Directors Dahl and Bookout. OAC. I will reappoint Director Dahl to the OAC. And the other committees stand as currently assigned. So with that, is there first of all public comment on the proposed assignments?
That's all right.
Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
I move that we approve.
Discussion. Didn't have mine in front of me. So we have what changed from within these requirements here? I didn't have my paper to keep up with all the stuff on it in front of me.
Perhaps so, the general manager could read off the... Yes, if you would, please.
Okay, there's two changes from what I have down here.
Vern, why don't you let me just read them off first? Okay. The appointments that President Hill made to the Finance Committee, Directors Dahl and Dean, to the Fire Committee, Vice President Bookout and Director Dean, to the Personnel Committee, Directors Mann and Dahl, to the Sanitation District, President Hill, Fire Oversight Committee, Director Dean, the Water and Sewer Committee, Directors Mann and President Hill, Community Enhancement, Vice President Bookout and Director Dean, and OAC, Director Dahl.
Okay. Okay, so you didn't have a request in for water and sewer. So we'll take that as...
I'd like to make a point of order. He doesn't have to put requests in. He doesn't request for himself.
So I would take that as his request is in there, so that's acceptable within the rules then. I just want to make sure that we're following within the rules. But the Fire Oversight Committee, at the subcommittee... Or at the ad hoc, Pamela, you said that conflicted with your
work. It conflicts with my work.
Yeah, but you know what? She can be appointed.
No, we need a motion to approve.
I thought Pamela,
I interrupted it in the middle. Yeah. I didn't get there.
So.
Okay. I move that we approve the president's appointments for the committee assignments as of today's date.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the committee assignments. On this particular case, may I have a roll call, Gina?
Director Dean?
Yes. Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, the committees are reassigned effective immediately. Item number 9E, board meeting protocol. I note that it's 10 minutes to 10. We have a considerable amount of business left.
Can I continue the
committee? I wonder if some of this might be moved to a future meeting.
You go to the closed session now and go home after that.
I think we should probably get as much done tonight as we possibly can, and I would move to continue on past 10 to finish the agendized item. There's some important things coming up on the agenda.
Yeah, closed session. Let's do that and then let's.
I don't know if you read the newspaper recently.
What?
I do not believe you read the newspaper recently, but you might be hearing a statement later on tonight.
The first thing we need to do is determine whether we're going to go past 10 o'clock. Hearing no move to proceed past 10, let's consider the warrants first.
I'm sorry. I believe I've already made a motion or asked to proceed past 10, Jim.
Do you want to rephrase that as a motion?
Do I need to make a motion? I'll make a motion to proceed past 10 to finish our business of Oceano.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed past 10 o'clock. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Okay, motion passes 3-2.
Okay.
In that case, we'll proceed back to the original order of the agenda. That is item number 9E. Patrick?
Director Dahl asked that this be added to the agenda, and I'm going to ask Director Dahl to proceed.
We can proceed on this item now, or we can proceed on this item after the closed session. I don't know which I have a preference on. Might be just as well to do the closed session first.
Do you want to?
It's item 90 now.
Then I think it would be best if we take the closed session, do the warrants, and then do the closed session out of order, and then come back and proceed on the rest of the meeting.
It's your request, Vern. We'll go ahead and do that. Okay. Moving to then item number 11, report of district representatives. We attended the board meeting on 9/17, the sanitation district meeting on.
Mr. President, the only thing I was thinking about taking that order was to do the warrants and do the closed session now, because of how late it is getting and with the with not everybody being in agreement to go past 10 o'clock, I wanted to get as much of these two major items done first, and then come back and fill in the rest of the agenda items. So not to go on and do the district reports and that, but to take the warrants out of order and the executive session out of order, and then we'll come back and go through the regular order of the agenda.
That sounds logical.
Let's consider the warrants then. Item number 14.
Mr. President, there is one correction, please. Under the voided warrants,
The first item, check 48220, should not be there. Check 48154 is for $1,518. That is the only voided warrant.
Okay, so the total of voided warrants is 1518? Is that correct?
1518, the second one only.
Thank you.
Who was that written to?
City of Grover Beach. Oh, it was okay. A duplicate payment.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, for their dispatch. Was that dispatch?
Other comment or questions on the warrants?
Move to approve the warrants as corrected.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the warrants as corrected. All in favor?
Oh, we still have public comment.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Vern. Is there public comment on the warrants? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. We will go back now for the closed session item. Patrick, would you inform us of the closed session? We'll reconvene after our closed session, and I'll ask District Council to provide a summary of the closed session.
Yes, with regard to item 10A, closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8, to meet with the agency's negotiator concerning property negotiations and to grant authority regarding terms. With the property involved being an interest in the district's water entitlements, the board met in closed session with its authorized representative, the general manager, and received a report, provided direction. No action was taken.
Thank you very much.
The record should also reflect that Director Mann is no longer present at the meeting. She left at the conclusion of the executive session.
Thank you. Then we have item number 9E left. Vern, that was your item? Is there public comment on this item? Since there's no report in the... It's hard for, I think, probably for the public to understand what this might be. I don't hear any public comment at this time.
This is here basically because... our meetings are just, well, put it bluntly, they're a joke, okay? I mean, we got people that turn us on channel for comic relief. And the reputation that this board has gotten in the community is... fairly low, and a lot of it has to do with how the meetings are being run, the way the personal attacks happen, and the attacks on staff, and so we tried to talk a bit about it in the general manager evaluations and the things that he has to put up with from this board and at this district, and trying to do it out of a public forum and nothing's changed. And so I kind of wanted to go through and talk about how we can hopefully clean up our act here and run a proper meeting. And there's been plenty of opportunity for trainings out there on how to run these meetings. And
a meeting that's not agendized item attacking the general manager, attacking a fellow director. In previous meetings, I've apologized to the public because I don't like what I'm seeing happening up here during the course of a meeting. It's not proper to present that to our public. And, you know, we're here to represent the residents of Oceano and look out for their best interests in the community. We're not here to attack a general manager. We're not here to, you know, we're not here to attack a fellow director. We're here to look out for the benefits of the community of Oceano. You know, times past, we had a previous general manager, and, you know, Jim, there was many times you attacked him during open meetings. That's not proper, you know, and to do that in the course of a meeting, you know, if you have a disagreement with someone, you should talk to them outside of a meeting, outside of the public. You know, our business here is representing the community of Oceano, the residents of Oceano, and it's gotten a little bit, you've gone the wrong direction. Ethics come into it. That's the only way I can say, you know, using proper ethics and realizing that when you attack someone during an open meeting, it's not proper. It's not civilized. Well, maybe for you. And I apologize for that. That was off color for me.
Thank you for your high-spirited comment.
I need to weigh in on this, too, because it's very uncomfortable many times to be here sitting in on the board and to see what's going on. I know that we can't always agree. We don't agree on many items, but that doesn't mean we need to be abusive and hostile and attack people. And particularly, Patrick has been, I don't know what you call it. I guess you call it an attack. It's very vocal, it's loud. I consider it hostile. And I consider that he's probably been in a hostile work environment because of what goes on here in this board meeting. It is not something I want to promote. I want to change this. I want to change this so we can talk reasonably. We can display good manners and good conduct and respect and fairness to everyone. And we don't need this. I mean, speak to the facts, speak to the issues, but really, the attack mode is something I do not like. I don't want to see it in my board. I don't want to see it in my community. I don't want to see it anywhere, really. This is not the way to handle our meetings. I don't like what's happened. So here we have a GM who has resigned because he can no longer work with us.
The second one.
So this, I'm asking, you know, what cost? It takes a year to get a general manager up to speed and going. So all of these are going to be, will be set back. It will not proceed properly. And it's, it really makes me feel bad. So I think we need to get our act together. We may have to have some special training for all of us because I don't like what's going on with us. And maybe that's what we should do. But we do need to air this, and I really do apologize to our constituents out there because we are not working in their best interests by doing this.
Yeah, and it's not just the costs of, you know, all the internal costs that that is going to end up, and it all ends up getting passed down to the ratepayers. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that, but there's a number of people out there that are very qualified and very knowledgeable that would be over here running for office and adding to the knowledge base and the and having the leadership in this community. But they don't want to run. They don't want to be involved in this. They don't want to be involved in the bitterness and the attacks and the stuff going on. They've disappeared and won't just won't submit themselves to it. And you know, why should they? And so the community loses in that manner as well. You look at and it starts. You know, it's from little things to major stuff. It's like, you know, you expect out of a new director to make, you know, as they don't know and as they learn what's going on, to do spelling corrections on it on minutes and so. You know, those are things that does not affect the minutes in any manner. And there's plenty of opportunity to communicate those things outside a public meeting instead of using the time of the public meeting to say you've misspelled something. But then to say that and then laugh at the, you know, to point that out to the general manager or the staff that they've misspelled something on a document they've provided in a public forum to the public and then laugh at them at the same time, what kind of work conditions are those? It's not, you know, it's not good, doesn't lead for good working conditions. We went over board meetings, the proper way to run a board meeting where the agenda item comes up, the general manager introduces that item, not someone on the board. It's not the board member's business to, you know, we're here to do for policies and procedures. It's not our business or our place to introduce the business. And when you got one board member introducing it, then the other four don't get the information from staff directly. They get an interpretation of that information. That's why staff always introduces an item. Okay. The only thing that in running a meeting there is to do is to announce which item is coming up, and then after that, okay, you know, if you want, there's room for questions, but from the board, but questions on the staff report only. And the only thing left for them to do is criticize because they don't have any opportunity for input anymore because we've already discussed it up here. And so that's the way a proper board meeting always runs. It runs with the staff introducing the agenda item, then it goes to public comment, and then it comes back to the board for discussion and decision, and then we move on to the next item. And this is not, you know, this is just standard procedure in all government procedures here. We don't go back and forth and have 10 public comment sessions on one agenda item like we did tonight. It's like we start a discussion, and as soon as somebody in the audience wants to put in their comments, everything gets stopped and interrupted here, and we're stopped in the middle of our thoughts and our discussion to go back and forth and back and forth, and it doesn't leave for good decision making. So we, you know, if we need, to pull somebody in here to train us on how to run a proper board meeting, then we should do that. You know, I mean, you know, beyond that, I don't know what to say. I mean, we've talked about this, and nothing changes.
It goes one in one ear and out the other. Earlier in the evening, you know, I talked about the previous fire chief, you know, June 19, 2007 letter written to the TPR says, Oceano Fire Chief Steinhauser resigns, claims he was forced out. Oceana part-time fire chief has resigned as head of the fire department effective Monday. Michael G. Steinhauser said he was issued an ultimatum by Oceano Community Service District President Jim Hill and Director Barbara Mann. They said I had a choice. They were either going to terminate me or I was going to resign. And I resigned, said Steinhauser. When contacted, Hill said, Mike chose to resign. He's giving good service to the people of Oceano. I do not want to criticize him. They were probably a couple of differences of opinion with the board. This looks to me like it was two members of the board attacking the fire chief, previous fire chief. We, meetings with our previous director were horrible. I mean, there were so many attacks with him. You know, Jim, you made a statement at an OCSD meeting on 7-9-2008. In no case is the board ever cut out of any decision of the management body of this district. Well, there's one circumstance with on June 19th, 2007, that this board was cut out of
the
decision.
Yeah, I guess he was told that...
This is hearsay?
Yeah. He was told that they had the three votes to get rid of him. And that's what one of the employees threatened them with their job. It's just out of line. And there's been a lot of this going on, this micromanaging, this going to the employees and telling them what they should be doing or shouldn't be doing, or behind the scenes of direction and directing. And it's completely, and this is part of the reason we have these problems we have down here. It can't stay within the board where it belongs here under policies and procedures. And it's turned this board into being a dysfunctional laughingstock in the county, and does a tremendous disservice to the citizens here.
You would never see the Board of Supervisors act the way this community of Oceano at this board meetings have acted. You know, and it's, I hate to say it, Jim, but you're the president. You have control of the meetings. You should run them in a proper order, you know, comparable to the way the Board of Supervisors runs their meetings. They run them very honorably. You know, we represent the community of Oceano. We represent each one of the residents out there. They don't need to see bickering. They don't need to see terminations of fire chiefs. They don't need to see, you know, going after a general manager during the course of a meeting. I don't know if a lot of you know out there, but in today's paper, we directors have received notice that our general manager, Patrick O'Reilly, has given us a resignation. I hate to see you quit. I really want to thank you for what you've done for this community. You've been a great service, a great benefit. I highly recommend you, and I really don't want to see you quit. You've done a lot of good benefits for this community, and you've gone way over the limits in participating in time with this community. Thank you.
And I want to second that, and I felt very sad to see the resignation. You were making great strides and make great efforts, and people don't understand that things, once they get into a bad shape, take a very long time to turn around. It's something with the financial auditing, that takes a while. You needed the help with the financial analyst. That's taken a while. The staff are being trained. We were instituting a new bookkeeping system. We had new front office staffing. We've done tremendous things with our staff. They do have salary steps, and we have cleaned that up. Codification's been taking place. All of these things are proceeding forward, and now I feel like we've stepped back and we may just be going sliding back. It's unfortunate. And it's unfortunate that you felt you could not sustain your position here and work with us anymore. And I would feel the same way. There were a lot of attacks from this podium, from the podium, from here, and it is not a good thing for us to be doing. I think we lack ethics all over the place. I've been looking into ethics law compliance.
You know, we talk about the stepping outside of what a director's supposed to do, and we're looking at the attacks that happen, and Bill had his lawsuit here, and that keeps getting brought up here at the meeting, okay, and I know that he's being targeted out there for because of the lawsuit, but you got to understand also that lawsuit that he had, we had 90% of the money together for the fix of that of Highway 1, and the board directed the general manager at the time to go out and put the different agencies together, okay, and to get the other to find who where we could get the other 10% to get that fix out there, okay, and outside of the board direction, this public meeting gets called, and all these agencies get called to come to a meeting here at the district that the general manager doesn't know about, and the other four board members doesn't know about until we all read it in the newspaper. Okay, and that meeting comes together, and they come in here thinking that they're going to talk about this and that type of stuff, and they all get attacked from the audience that's loaded up, okay, and they walked away from here and all the walls went up, okay, and there became no cooperation, it's not our responsibility, we heard that so many times, we're worried about a lawsuit, that type of thing that all kept happening, and all that would have gone away, none of this would have been an issue. Okay, if that meeting hadn't have put everything off on the wrong foot, and that all happened from stepping out of the bounds of what a director is supposed to do, and I don't, you know, I'm kind of at a loss of how to bring this back to some professionalism here.
You know, that meeting, I had to recuse myself from it because it was dealing with my property. But, Jim, you've brought it up several times at meetings here, OCSD meetings. You've attacked me over and over and over. I've watched the videotape of that meeting quite a few times. And you have to remember, I had not taken any legal action against OCSD in 2005, nor in 2004 when I started flooding. You had enough knowledge to correct OCSD's liability with that flooding problem in 2005. You were the president, and you chose not to. You didn't call for a second meeting like you said you were going to. You didn't bring anyone back together to remove that PVC pipe that OCSD has in the community's drainage inlet. You know, the rest of the issues is the county and Caltrans and the railroad.
I am confused, and it's getting late. This seems to have talked drifted onto a discussion of drainage. If we want to discuss board meeting protocol,
changes. So perhaps we can come up with something in a committee, and then bring it back to the board. I think we're all just kind of disgusted.
Yeah, you know, we need to make for our community of Oceano. We need their respect, and that we are representing them properly. We don't need to be having to deal with attacks of the general manager, attacks of the fire chief, attacks of me, attacks of another director up here. We need to represent the community of Oceano. We need to tend to business for the community of Oceano. We don't need to be correcting spelling up here. That can be done outside the meetings.
The
maybe we, you know, we can look at somehow bringing somebody in here to set up or help us to figure out exactly step by step how we need to go about some of these, you know, these procedures and make sure our meetings run step by step properly. And that might be our first step to try to get rid of some of this stuff, some of these problems.
John Seitz is teaching ethics. He's our previous attorney, and I think he's very qualified. He might be someone to look at bringing in here and talking with all of us about ethics, reinstilling how to run a meeting properly without, you know, stepping over the boundaries where you're attacking people. I think he's a very qualified person, very knowledgeable, and I've actually taken an ethics class from him.
Napomo.
Mr. President, are you
getting
public
comment?
Public comment doesn't come until after the board discussion is over with.
Okay, I just want to know whether to sit out or not.
You know, they deal through a lot of business in the FOMO. And they have some fairly well-run meetings. They get a lot of stuff done. They have disagreements on issues, but once the vote is taken, there's no problems after that. You know, if you disagree, fine, and that's okay, that's healthy. But it doesn't affect the rest of the agenda, or the interactions or anything that goes on the board. And you know, I haven't talked to anybody over there. But maybe we might try approaching someone down there and see if they would come in and just give a brief overview of how meetings are run, should be run to try to get more done on less time and without
that. They're turned around and sued us for his own personal gain. And I hear that over and over and over again. Now, I'm sorry that, Director Dean, passion scares you. Director Dahl, confrontation scares you. But what
Mr. President, it's clear in the rules of order she's not supposed to direct individual directors.
And rules of order,
it's your job to enforce that.
This is another point.
I am supposed to interrupt her when you're not doing your job.
And another, Mr. President, another problem that I've repeatedly brought to this board, right, is that whether you want to call it whatever you want, you need a parliamentarian. I have sat on 75-person commissions for counties, states, and federal. This is nothing compared to what other people go through. Well, you know what I want to tell the five of you? Butch up. That's what people who advocate for people truly in their heart, they get thick skin and they agree to disagree. They do not bank on dividing and conquering. And that's what's happened here. That's what's happened here. And it's happened because one of your directors is suing the people who elected him. And that morally hurts. It hurts us because we trusted him. We trusted him. So if there's a morale problem in Oceano, look, people are always going to come to a good show. But, you know, as I go out there and I talk to more and more people, they can't even believe that the sitting directors haven't passed an ordinance or something to protect themselves. And you have an attorney who sits here at the table, and you have a director who comments on an ongoing legal case with another director who's suing us, and nobody bothers to stop. I plead with you. Look at Robert's Rules of Order. They've worked for the U.S. Congress. They've worked for the House. They've worked for County Board of Supervisors.
They've worked for Caltrans. They've worked for every government entity except for you. You would not have these problems. You wouldn't have them. They're already invented. This is nothing new. What's new is that you have to come to the conclusion you don't know all the Robert's Rules of Order. You do need a parliamentarian, as Mr. Dahl states, to stop that. Because a parliamentarian will facilitate. You cannot pay attention to what is on an agenda for an elected town, in an elected position, and facilitate a meeting and keep perfect order. It is impossible unless you're just breezing through. You cannot have a staff that goes unsupervised. Every staff person has to be accountable to somebody. Sometimes our general managers don't feel accountable to you directors because he doesn't CC the president on anything. He doesn't listen to the president. He listens to Pamela Dean. He listens to Director Bookout, but not the president. So,
is there other public comment? Hearing none. Do you wish to appoint an ad hoc committee?
So this is just more attacks.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to clarify something. The general manager spoke a minute ago. If you could rephrase how public comment is supposed to be handled when by the president, public comment is supposed to be directed towards the board in general. President.
Right. Not even the president. It's supposed to be directed to the board in
to
general.
To the board.
Right. Not about any individual ever.
Okay.
And it's the president's responsibility to enforce it. So that is in our rules of order. And it's seldom done here, actually.
We've already had public comment. Thank you.
Did you want to make any comments?
There are ways to run public agency meetings effectively. They include pretty much what Director Dahl mentioned before. You have public comment, not public discussion or conversations or interchange. You allow the public to present their thoughts on the issue, and then they're out of it. The public doesn't come back into it, not by standing at the podium or sitting in their chairs and making loud off-color comments. The public has a responsibility, just like the directors have a responsibility. And when meetings are run properly, you don't have the chaos that we have here. And I believe if this district wants to be effective, they need to have a president that will run the meetings appropriately. It's not done here. That's my comment.
Thank you.
Want to put a committee together or something, or send it to one of the existing ones or something to look farther into this, to bring some kind of training or rules of together to more narrowly define how the meetings are run, or what do the rest of you think?
Something has to be done. I mean, we need to take an action on this. Ethics training, as Pamela has brought in something here, I mean, I'm willing to go back to ethics training. I think getting John Seitz possibly to come in and do an ethics training for the whole entire board. We need to run our meetings professional, representing the community of Oceano. They haven't been run that way. So that's one thing we could do, is redo the ethics training for all of us.
And it might take a committee to come up with some ideas and brainstorm. This particular ethics compliance relates to everything that happens in a district, not just some of our conflict of interest codes that we have been trained in. And I think it is well taken, so I will give that a copy to Patrick so he can provide those to everyone on the board. It's a very good place.
Bernie, willing to serve on the committee?
I'm
Yeah, I'm willing. Whatever the president thinks, you know, President, appoint who you think, whatever you think.
I would appoint Director Dahl and Vice President Bocout to the committee with the consensus of the board.
That would be fine.
It's okay.
Brian?
Yeah.
So be it. Does that end this item? Does that end this item for tonight? Okay, thank you. Do we want to proceed then with the reports? Item number 11A. I attended the board meeting. The other directors can mention that. I attended the sanitation district meeting. The I had it a moment ago. The action items before the sanitation district were trunk sewer accessibility project. Grover Beach will be billed a major portion of that project for their part to reimburse the trunk sewer accessibility, as that's part of joining the Grover Beach trunk line into the district's territory. There was a bypass manhole project, which is a contract award. Natural gas distribution system upgrade, a major budget item that was approved for proceeding. The district declared miscellaneous surplus items to be surplus and are looking into sale of those items. They considered amending purchasing policy to include a preference for local vendors, and the consensus there was that a 5% preference for local vendors would be honored where that was reasonable and lawful. Equipment maintenance software, they purchased software for equipment maintenance and had an operating revenue difference versus rate study projection. That was the business of the sanitation district.
Anything else?
I did attend the fire committee. The discussion centered on consolidation efforts. Also attended the Aurora Grande City Council meeting last night, where the council directed city staff to proceed along the directions of consolidating the fire organizations. I think the consensus was that there was a great benefit to all of the residents to do that. Bill?
The board meeting, were you going to report on the board meeting on the 17th?
The board meeting on the 17th was a, if I recall, that was about the OCCI contract?
Yes. It was a special.
There was a special meeting because an additional item that was on the...
Jim Hill and Barbara Mann both were there. It was a great meeting. We got all several CSDAs, Port San Luis, Napomo, Heritage Ranch was there. A lot of information. We got to see Paul Hood from LAFCO, talk with him. John Seitz, he's a attorney. It was recommended at the CSDA to change them from annual to bi-monthly, and I believe it's annual. Am I correct, Gina, when I say that? Just a very, very informative knowledge pool there. You might have some more things to say about Jim.
No, I think you have.
Okay.
All right, Vern.
All right. We had the ad hoc meeting. It was there, and that was covered earlier in the evening. On September 22nd,
We had the Oceano Advisory Council meeting. There were two items before the council. It was a lot split off of the Pike in the Halcyon area, and that was approved or supported by the council. And then there was a lot split that got to refer to the council that was just a little bit up onto the mesa. And so it was a little bit out of our area, but since it was referred to us, we went ahead and commented on it that it was a fit within what was going on in the area. So it was rather easy and simple. There was a announcement, or announced at the advisory council that the board was going to be looking tonight at reassigning who was to be going to the advisory council, and who was going to be representing the OCSD at the advisory council. And since that was my why I was on the advisory council, they did not want to. They wanted to make sure that if the board had reassigned someone else to attend the advisory council, that I would still be on the advisory council. So they went ahead and put me in as an alternate as a member at large in case the board had switched its representation. That's basically what we looked at. We talked a little bit about our map and the area, the boundaries that we're in, that we represent. And I reported on my meeting with Halcyon, going over those. And Vicki Jansen from Cacho's office came to the meeting on behalf of Cacho, since Cacho had to be at another meeting. And it was one of those pleasantries that you get to do now and then, where they gave a certificate of recognition to Norm Getty for all the work that he had done, and an appreciation of the major contribution that he made to the zone. The cleaning of the creek is pretty much finished now. It's a lot of the vegetation has been cleaned and cleared. The flap gates have been cleaned and cleared around them. The invasive species, mostly the castor bean plant, they pulled a lot of that out. They were not able to get a lot of cleaning done toward the end of the creek, past the railroad bridge, because as it got later into the season, it became more moisture around there, and the frogs started coming in. So they had quite a large area, about 150 feet or so that they were not able to clean. And they're working on looking at what kind of designs they're going to have to do to raise the levee. There's been a number of encroachments on the levee that that will need to be designed around. So that's working in the plans that they're going to be doing that now. Figuring out what they're going to have to do to design around those. They're working on their emergency response plan. That's still in the works. They found one large bullfrog above the 22nd bridge. And bullfrogs, they eat red-legged frogs, but they also eat the young steelhead fish. And the permit, when they run into something like that, their permit requires them to to kill any bullfrogs. So that was one thing that that happened during the cleaning process. The flap gate that they've been on the Sand Canyon has been received. It's in, but it's still in the yard. Going to be installing it next month. The next meeting is October 21st, and the following meeting will be November 18th. And that concludes the Zone 11A. I also was at the Airport Land Use Commission, and when they met, there was basically two items on the agenda that that had to be dealt with, and one of the items was, and that item was basically what they were looking at as a change of zoning on a piece of property, and it was an agricultural piece of property, and they were changing it to part of it being rural residential, and one piece being rural residential, two pieces of it being industrial, and two pieces of it being commercial service. It was a little bit interesting in that it was, the plan was supported by the county and not supported by the city. And so there was a little bit of turf war going on there, I think, with it being developed according to whose ideas of what would be best out there. That's it for the airport land use, and I don't have anything else. So that concludes my reports.
Pamela.
I'm reporting on Zone 3, September 18th meeting. The operations of the treatment plant, they had the chlorine dioxide system go offline for 6 weeks. It was repaired by the purveyor of the equipment, but it was a problem for operations, and they had to do everything by hand. They have 70% capacity in Lopez Lake, and they've been treating 5 million gallons per day of Lopez water. No state water is being treated right now. They're running the Paul membrane test, which is a six-week test for the treatment. This is the last big test they have to do for the treatment plant. And they're running at the design of the plant, which will be 6 million gallons per day. So that started as of Monday of this week. The heads up, and that will be coming at the next meeting, is that operations has gone over budget by $800,000. There will be no additional increases to billings because they're using offsets from other kinds of things they were supposed to be doing, other items of work, and they're not going to do those so that they can offset the $800,000 over budget. It is coming on a lot more expensive than they thought and a lot more labor intensive. We looked at almost every kind of water feasibility study at the last meeting, including the recycling feasibility report of 2001 that the sanitation district did. And there, the upshot was that the water was too expensive and they had no buyers. And they were looking at, in this case, $8,000 per acre foot for water to provide water for turf. If it were ag water, it would be even more expensive because they would have to deal more with the salt in the water. So the tertiary plant, they went over the study that they had done in 2001, and they said that $8,000 per acre foot would go up to 35% at least. Yields range from 700 to 1,300 acre feet, and I don't have the final report, so I'm going to leave that until we get the final report. We only got 4 pages of the report, and a lot was missing.
The big thing on the spillway is that the environmental portion of it and the permitting portion of it will be much more expensive than the building of it. They figure it will cost four and a half million. Sorry, I can't remember exactly. I'll have to get back to you on the cost, but they're saying the major portion of the cost is for environmental permits and permitting from Division of Dam Safety. The other thing that they are worried about is the habitat conservation plan. The raising of the dam could trigger new releases for the steelhead in the creek. So they don't want to go further with this until we have a habitat conservation plan. That final plan is into the National Marine Fisheries, and the person who is reviewing that is on vacation, but they're thinking another year, and that will be, they're hoping another year, and that conservation plan will be approved. So that other area they've looked at is the farmers' use of the Arroyo Grande Creek and how much pumping is taking place there. So what they want to do is get together with the farmers, talk with them about what if they're using ag water from the creek itself or how they're using the creek to see if we can come to some agreement about appropriate and equal fair use of the creek and not having to pour additional water from the dam down to the creek. The interesting thing was that Brian Talley was there. He said he has no pumping out of the creek for his operations, and they use the drip system, which is very efficient. However, they have one tenant who does pump out of the creek. So this will be an ongoing thing. They're looking at all forms of ways to get water, and none of them are easy, and none of them are cheap. And I'm going to conclude right now because of the late night, and we'll talk about this more after the next meeting. I could give you a little more update.
Thank you. Is there public comment on the director's reports? Any questions among the board? General manager items for discussion. Patrick?
Yeah, I have three quick items. On Tuesday, the County Board of Supervisors approved the sale of the Oceano Community Center to the Lucy M. R. Unified School District, and they're trying to get the paperwork finished before the end of the month, so we should see school district personnel in that facility soon, shortly, a couple of weeks, hopefully. Gina Davis and I had our first meeting with our firefighters to begin negotiations for the development of a memorandum of understanding. It went very
You will definitely be missed. Hate to see you leave us in this direction. But I think with your resignation, we should probably schedule a meeting rather quickly in the prospects of looking for a new general manager. Your October 10th will come by very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I would hope that the fellow board members would look at that. But once again, I want to thank you for the accomplishments and things you've found in our district, which you've made great improvements on. There were things here that I would never known, and same with other directors, you know, and how our office is run. You've corrected a lot of problems within our office, and I do appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I definitely want to also echo the thanks on behalf of the board and behalf of the community for the contributions you've made here and for your positive attitude and your positive way that you're moving on in your willingness to up to the last day do your very best for the district here and to make the district as as much help as you can in your moving on, which I know you have, but you are doing, and you're involved in. And I want to thank you for that as well. You are going to be missed. It does set us back a bit on a lot of our projects. You've proven to me, if not to many other people here, your capabilities and your proven abilities, but you've also proven that to numerous people at the Port St. Louis area where you're going, which is obvious, and obvious from the article in the newspaper as well, and the high regards and the fact that you were at the very top of their choice. It goes to show you that we have had a very capable individual here, and it's very sad to see you go, and sad for us at the board, sad for the community, and I know you'll do an excellent, wonderful job for them over there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Patrick for his positive contributions to the district, and again wish you well in your future endeavors.
And I don't want to say goodbye until it's the bitter end.
No, it's another couple of weeks. It's a few more weeks. Yeah.
I guess I would request that the personnel committee arrange to meet as reasonably soon as possible to start to facilitate transition process.
Do you want to do that with to take advantage of the couple weeks that we do have as far as recruitment or something like that's concerned?
Under these circumstances, I would say the next possible day that we could have an OCSD meeting to look at the procedures of recruiting a new general manager is we need to do that. We need to get our advertisements out there, as we've done in the past. We need to, bring in an interim general manager. Even though Arnie Dowdy did a great job, I think we need to find a general manager to bring in here that's ready, running, and having Patrick's assistance will be greatly appreciated in that process. Also, Patrick, you've learned a lot in this district. Mm-hmm. You know things that, I hope we'll write as a handbook, because there's so many things that you've uncovered and found that are important, and it'd be best that we all know what's going on.
Yeah, I will endeavor to do that.
Thank you.
Make notes and stuff, yeah.
So I, for myself, I don't know when we could have a next meeting. Would it be Friday or Monday?
Monday would be Monday. It's got to be 72 hours. So if we posted it tomorrow, it would be Monday.
I would recommend we do Monday.
Alex, do we do these in closed session or open session?
The specific appointment of somebody you can do in closed session or open session, but if all you're talking about is the general procedure for how you're going to go about recruiting, I think you have to do that in open session. Okay. The other thing you might think about doing to expedite this is you might set a general a special board meeting a little farther out, say maybe next Wednesday or Thursday or whatever's appropriate, and try and get the personnel committee together before then so that as a committee they could do a little bit of the legwork and have something to report to the general board rather than constituting a meeting and maybe spinning your wheels for a couple of hours and coming up with a game plan. That's just a suggestion.
That's a good suggestion.
I will not be in town next Wednesday, nor will I be in town on next Tuesday. I like the suggestion of the personnel committee meeting. However, I think we're all pretty, it's been a year, and I think we're all pretty know what we need to do. And just as a board, acting together rather than having a personnel committee and then having a meeting after that, I think we should just get down all the members of the board and work this out together.
What about interim?
The personnel.
We could look at interim.
We could look at interim, yes.
That would be the one.
I don't really want to wander off the Brown Act here in terms of what's on the agenda for this meeting. But I will.
This does fall underneath emergency.
Yeah, I don't think this would qualify as an emergency.
We could do something on. Can those meetings be held on a weekend?
There's nothing that prevents you from holding a meeting on the weekend except the financial concerns and people's availability.
It's you and Director Mann.
Yeah. But that would mean that you would have to make yourself available on a weekend.
Oh, I can do that. Okay. It would be Sunday, you know.
Yeah, it'd have to be toward the end of the day for me. I'm busy during the day both days. It couldn't be during the day. It would have to be sometime after 4 or 5.
I could do Sunday.
Oh, are we talking about a personnel committee meeting or a board meeting?
Yeah. That way we could still have a board meeting on Monday.
Boy, if we have a committee meeting late Sunday evening, it's going to be very difficult to get anything ready for a board meeting Monday evening.
Well, how about Saturday evening?
We can't do it Saturday. It's 72 hours from Thursday. So it's Friday, Saturday. Sunday is the earliest.
Okay.
Well, with all this being said, I think we should just have a meeting on Monday.
A board meeting.
A board meeting on Monday.
And on Monday she won't?
Well, still, if she's not available on Monday, there's four of us here. And this is something that, you know, we're at the end of September right now. October 10th is just a week and a half away, 2 weeks away. So being in the best position we can be representing the community of Oceano is what we need to do right now. And I think time is of the essence.
What do you think?
I guess we probably should see if we need to have a meeting of the board. As Alex kind of said, are we going to spin our wheels? Is there going to be some legwork done? I think we've gone through the process relatively recently. Probably have, we can probably follow essentially the same process we did. We've generated job descriptions, you know, the various documents to get us through this process.
Yeah, that would be one of the decisions, you know, one of the things to look at if that's how we're going to do it again the same way and that type of thing, and who's going to direct it and that type of stuff is all the things we need to look at.
Well, if we want to have an entire board meeting, I could participate on Friday.
We can't or, do, for, can't do for next week Friday?
Well, next week evenings.
So next week Monday, you can't make it next week Monday?
No.
And Bill, you can't make it next week Tuesday?
Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
There's Sunday evening. We can do it Sunday evening.
Okay.
Sunday evening and the item of considering recruitment of new general manager.
Both the permanent and an interim.
Permanent and interim, yes. Okay. Item 15, public comment. Any public comment at this time? Hearing none. Is there any written communication?
There is none.
Okay. With that, then, we're adjourned.